from the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours in so many time zones, stretching from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands out west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the Internet, thanks to the genius of Broadcast.com, the distributor, and the Intel Corporation, responsible for the code in the G2 program that allows you to go up to my website, download the G2 player, and then come back to my website and click on streaming video, and you'll see me sitting here doing the program and just having a wonderful time. As a matter of fact, I must tell you, it was a beautiful summer day in the desert. Summer has finally arrived here in the desert. The sun was out. We topped 100 degrees. It was what you expect. In the trees, the little birdies sang such a sweet song the day through. It was just, you know, it was a good day to be alive. Now, in a moment, we're going to talk to Peter Gersten. Peter Gersten is the director of CAUSE, Citizens Against UFO Secrecy. And we've had him on quite a bit lately. Peter's been on quite a bit lately. Of course, there is a lot going on. And Peter's guy, I know he's got a couple of questions for me, and I've got a couple of questions for him. So it should be a fun evening, to be sure. They say the king of terror comes in July, but actually he'll be on next hour. Ed Dames will be here. Did you hear that, Ed? Arizona, Peter, welcome to the program once again.
Good evening, Arthur. How are you?
I am just fine. Not too many people call me Arthur. That's nice.
I'm the only one that calls you Arthur, I bet.
You're going to have to get right into that phone, Peter. You're not too strong tonight.
Can you hear me better now?
That's better.
Okay, I'll talk up.
Oh, that's good.
I'll think there's a jury in front of me.
What are you like when you're in front of a jury and you're delivering your closing arguments?
Brilliant. That's what the judges tell me when I'm finished.
Well, boy, I'll tell you. I collect attorney jokes, you know.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I won't burden you. Look, what's up? What's new? What are you doing here? Why are we on?
Well, happy day after solstice, first of all.
Oh, thank you.
Let me ask you a quick question. Have you noticed more people getting sick lately?
Yes. Yes. If you go by my email and my faxes, then absolutely yes.
Even within CAUSE, the webmaster Keith, who's your webmaster, you know, was in the hospital for about 3 or 4 days.
That was more than just a passing illness, as
yeah.
You know. Keith is recovering at home right now, and he's on medication. And, you know, we're all crossing our fingers and knocking on wood. So that's, you know, as in really sick. Listen, Peter, in the last year to year and a half, I could almost it's almost like the circle of death around Clinton, you know, the number of people who have fallen ill or seriously ill or died around me.
It's strange. The editor of Cause and Effect, the newsletter,
yes,
his significant other came down with a lymphatic form of cancer.
Oh God, I'm so sorry.
My sister-in-law is dying from brain cancer.
I'm so sorry.
You know,
so's Terrence, you know that.
Yeah, it's amazing. Another friend of mine broke out in hives, a severe case of hives for 4 days.
I've had nothing but facts after facts about this hive problem.
Really?
Yep. You tell me what's going on. What do you think's going on, Peter?
Something's going on, whether it's a different kind of energy. It's almost like we're being given an opportunity to clear certain repressed emotions that are coming up. And if we don't, they come up, they manifest physically or emotionally. People are going through a lot of issues right now, emotionally, physically, spiritually. And I think something is happening now. I think there's no doubt about that.
It's the quickening. Now, all I've ever said is that we are headed toward an event. People have interpreted that to mean I'm saying the end of the world's coming. Well, no, it isn't. But some big event in the large scope of human existence is going to occur.
It seems so, and that's why we're here, it seems, also, in this time and space, for this event. That's why we came here. But that's not the reason that I called you. I need your advice. I need your guidance, and I need your opinion. And for tonight, I'm asking you to be my counsel. In other words, of counsel.
To be your counsel.
Be my counsel. And give me your opinion as to what I want to talk to you about.
Sure, no problem. I'll need a small retainer. It'll be about $250 an hour, but go right ahead.
You're a trip. I'll tell you that. You are definitely a trip. As you know, and it's coincidentally, both leads for what I'm about to talk about occurred on your show, of all places. So you are in a unique position of being able to comment on it.
Oh, God, I think I know where you're going to go.
Hopefully without some conflict of interest. So if you can't be objective, just tell me.
Oh,
but basically, geez. I'm director of Citizens Against UFO Secrecy. Citizens Against UFO Secrecy is against all secrecy, whether it's from the military, whether it's from the government, whether it's from civilian UFO researchers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we put that on the side for a second. At the present time, COAUSE has a lawsuit in the United States District Court in Phoenix, Arizona, against the Department of Defense for information on those V-shaped triangular UFOs.
Yes.
And the Department of Defense has denied any information. So what I have to do now is prove the existence of the object to the satisfaction of the court, and then I can infer, well, if the object exists, then the Department of Defense has to have information. Mm-hmm. While I'm planning to do this, the U.S. Attorney's Office is moving to dismiss the lawsuit based on the fact the Department of Defense did a reasonable search and could not find any information. And that's the only issue in a Freedom of Information lawsuit, the reasonableness of the search. So, and as a matter of fact, in an FOIA lawsuit, discovery is very limited. But there is a possibility of discovery. Now, I have to find not only established existence of the object, but also try to find places for the Department of Defense to search, because it's obvious the reason they haven't found the documents is because they're not looking in the right places.
Mm.
All right? So any leads that would allow me to hopefully tell the DOD where to look, I have a professional responsibility, all right?
Right.
On your show, on separate occasions, there were two individuals that came on and stated that they have spoken to informants who have given them information about certain aspects of the UFO phenomena. And the two individuals, the first one is Peter Davenport.
Right.
And if you remember, it occurred back in April of 1997 when he was on your show, and he told you that he had a meeting with two federal employees.
That's correct.
All right. And he also told you on the show what these two federal employees told him. And they told them three things. Number one, that the UFO phenomena is undeniably real.
Sure.
Two, that UFOs are what they appear to be, namely sophisticated craft under some kind of intelligent control. There's my link. In other words, to the V-shaped objects. And the third thing is that they told him that their organization, whatever that organization is quote-unquote worried about them. All right? So now here I am, director of COAUSE, with a lawsuit in Phoenix, and I have a professional responsibility to follow up on these leads. Now, I contacted Peter, and he confirmed everything that I just said.
He
cooperated and told me about the meeting, but he also said that he had promised these two individuals that he would not reveal their identity.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Okay, now we move over a little bit, and another individual was on your show on two occasions. Both of those times was during those disclosure programs, and I was on, and that's Dr. Stephen Green. On several occasions, he has indicated that he has over 100, possibly even 200 people.
Witnesses.
And I would assume in positions where they would be an eyewitness, right, to something significant.
Yes.
But for the fact that they do not want to come forward, all right, and they have information. At one point, I thought he said that would benefit mankind or something like that. But they're only waiting for congressional immunity or something along those lines.
Right.
And as far as I'm concerned, we're never going to get congressional immunity. It's a factual impossibility. So my question to you now, I can now, and the motion is prepared, I'm ready to submit it, ask the court. Now, of course, the court, it's not guaranteed the court will allow it. Ask the court to give me a subpoena to depose both of these individuals. Now, the reason...
You want to depose...
Dr. Greer and Peter Davenport.
Peter Davenport.
Yeah, I want to take a videotaped deposition. And I'm going to pose to him basically the questions. Who are these two people, Peter, and what agency? And he has, you see, there are certain privileges within the law, attorney-client. See, I have a privilege. None of the other people have a privilege. So I can protect any of these witnesses actually better than any of the UFO researchers. Yeah, I want to know who these people are because I have a professional responsibility to follow this through. Now, he said, listen, I promised that I wouldn't tell them anything and I don't want to jeopardize their position.
Okay, let me stop you for a sec.
Go ahead.
You obviously talked to at least one, if not both, of these gentlemen. You talked to Peter. All right, Peter.
Yeah.
You talked to Peter and you said, Peter, I'd like to depose you.
Well, through an email, basically. Actually, I didn't talk to him. It was through email.
All right. Whatever. Through email, you said you would like to depose him.
Yeah,
in other words, almost forcing him to disclose who these people are.
Well, he also told me that he's sorry. He promised them that. If he had it to do over again, he wouldn't. So I said, well, I'll take the burden from you.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I'll force you to do it so that you have no choice because there are only certain privileges, attorney-client, doctor, patient, clergy, parishioner, and then husband and wife and certain limitations. There is no privilege between UFO researcher and informant. The law doesn't recognize any privilege. So he would have to tell me.
Well, I'm not going to give you the answer you're going to want.
No,
I can't speak for Peter Davenport.
Okay.
Of course. But if I was Peter Davenport, I would not disclose it to you under deposition or not. And I realized the position that would put me in other words, you might send my ass to jail.
Well, the judge could find you and send you to jail.
Yeah, that's right. And so here you are in a pretty strange position approaching the possibility of doing this to these two gentlemen, both of them. You and I know both of them, and they're both good people. God, I don't know, Peter. I mean, you're lucky. You're an attorney. Somebody can come to you and say, look, I know about these black triangles, and I know what part of the DOD you could inquire from and expect to get an answer, but I'm only going to give you this information if you let me remain anonymous. You have that privilege, And in a way, Peter Davenport should have the right to protect the confidence he gave. And so you're gonna be really putting them between a rock and a hard place, aren't you?
Well, you know what the problem is? In Peter's case, I didn't hear the show. I wasn't even aware of the show until one of my members sent me an email, more or less saying, Peter, here is some evidence. You might listen to what Peter said on our show and go forward. So it's almost like I have a professional responsibility to do what I have to do, whether I personally agree with
or
not.
Oh, believe me, I understand your position.
Okay, but see, the problem is, and I told this to in the email to Peter, and I believe the same thing for Dr. Greer. It's one thing to agree to keep the person confidential, but then to go on national radio and then tell everybody, well, I have these people, but they told me this and they told me that, and we don't even know the motivation of why, you know.
I get a lot. Listen, Peter, I get a lot of that, and I guess I'm reacting from my own experience. In other words, I'm a talk show host. I deal in these matters, as you well know, on a nightly basis, and I'm told a lot of things by sources that do not wish to be made public, And so I guess in my profession, I might have some protections in that regard, or maybe I wouldn't. Suppose I was the guy, Peter.
Well, it depends if you're considered a reporter or not. If this is a source and you wrote a story as a reporter, then you would have, I assume, in Nevada also has the...
But how is broadcast all that different? In other words, broadcast, if I'm telling a story in a broadcast forum like this one.
I would argue that it isn't any different and that you should have the privilege.
But not Peter Davenport.
Well, not unless, you know, there's some reason, you know, he fits into some of the categories for privilege. I don't see which one he does.
Did he react to your email?
Yeah, basically, he suggested that maybe he could arrange a meeting for us. But I haven't heard from him in a month.
Oh.
That's the reason. I followed up on it, and I haven't heard from him in a month. And basically, I'm just following up on what my responsibility is, I would say.
No, I hear that. Hold on. We'll be right back to you, Peter. Peter Gersten, indeed. Peter Davenport. My. This really is a kind of a tough call. It was not exactly a question that I was prepared for. You knew that, didn't you, Kristen? We'll be right back.
From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Well, Gersten's here with a hell of a question. He's talking about deposing Peter Davenport and Dr. Stephen Greer. Deposing them, taking their statement under sworn oath. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. This is a hard one in a lot of ways. In the sense that perhaps with Peter Davenport, there you're dealing with an ethical issue on Peter's side. In other words, what does he do ethically? In the case of Dr. Greer, a lot of the witnesses that I believe he says he has have taken security oaths. Now, that's something I'll bring up with Peter here in a second. But they've taken security oaths, and they will not come forward unless there is congressional action to give them some sort of immunity, something Peter Gersten does not see coming. So, in the case of Dr. Greer, the revelation of those names without congressional intervention could, I guess, put somebody in jail. It makes it an awful lot harder question. So we'll get back to into all of this very interesting question in a moment. Okay, here's Peter Gersten once again. Peter, welcome back. Peter plans to depose Peter Davenport, the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, and Dr. Stephen Greer of CSETI. What about, Peter, what I said coming out of the break? Now, in the case of Dr. Greer, arguably, there are people who have come to Dr. Greer who have signed agreements with the government not to reveal anything. And so, at least to some degree, those are going to be some of the names that you're going to get. And when you get them, you are then going to expose these people to prosecution from the government, right?
Initially, I would protect them through John Doe affidavits. I don't have to relieve them. I don't have to state their name. I would do any affidavits on my behalf on information and belief. If there came a time when they would have to testify in court,
yes,
then I would ask the U.S. Attorney's Office to grant them immunity. Why wouldn't the U.S. Attorney grant them immunity? the Department of Defense, their client says they don't have any information, so now I have a witness that has information. So I would ask them to grant them any kind of immunity concerning the testimony. In other words, testimony.
Yeah, but they'll say, yeah, sure, but they'll say, no, we will not grant any such immunity because it is a matter of national security. This person signed a secrecy agreement.
Okay, but I'm only interested in the V-shaped objects, which according the triangular objects, which according to them, they don't have any information on. So how could something affect national security and they do not have any information
on
it?
Well, you and I both know they're full of crap. They've got plenty of information on it, but...
But as long as they're going to take the position that they do not have any records, see, they didn't find records and withhold them on national security grounds like the CIA did and the NSA did. They said they have no information. Now, if they said they had information and it's withheld on national security, then of course I couldn't do anything. We just argue whether they are properly exempt, like in the other cases we had. But in this particular case, the Department of Defense is saying they do not have any information on something that's awesome in size. You know, it's ridiculous. So there comes a time when you have to seize the moment, caught the M, take advantage of every opportunity, and that's what CAUSE is about. And basically, when you speak to and I'm getting back to Davenport now.
Sure.
When you speak to two federal employees and they tell you that the UFO phenomena is undeniably real, that UFOs are what they appear to be, namely sophisticated craft.
I agree with you.
It's one thing, you know, and what else did they tell? What was the purpose of them coming forward and giving out this information?
Well, if I were Peter Davenport, I would have done exactly what he said he was going to do. I would have gone back to the people based on your pressure, and I would have said, look, you've got to help me out here. I'm in fear of or I may be deposed and forced to give your names, and I would like to have you come forward and possibly still remain anonymous to the general public, but begin the process of disclosure because that's what I know you're trying to do here. So that's what I would have done had I been Peter. Now, maybe they told him to take a hike.
Well, the bottom line is the reason I'm on the show is because I really rather not have to go this route.
Right. Oh, right.
You know, I'd rather have somebody call me and say, listen, I'm one of the people that met with Peter. Let's meet as long as you can protect, you know, my identity. And I, according to the law, have that right to protect it. Now,
then you're really making an appeal here for the people involved, both with both of these gentlemen, Peter Davenport and Dr. Greer, to come forward to you now with attorney-client privilege guaranteed, rather than putting these gentlemen through the ringer.
Yeah, of course. You know, harmony is a lot easier than rivalry.
Boy, attorneys.
So, yeah, let's come together. We have the opportunity of finding a judicial solution. Congressional immunity is not going to happen. Congress can't give, you know, immunity to people in the military. You know, they have a completely different military justice.
Well, you remember what Rodney King said. Maybe your line should be, can't we all just testify?
Yeah, right. Let's just come forward. And you know... What? How easy it is. The more people you tell, the more protected you are. Of course.
I know. Yes, I know.
If you keep secrets, then you're in jeopardy. But that
really is true. That really is true.
Yeah.
And if there really is something behind this dark and sinister and secret, and there is a hint that somebody's coming forward, then they are indeed in jeopardy until they have come forward fully.
Yeah, and you want to hear another coincidence? I've been asked to speak at the Bay Area UFO Expo in September 4th and 5th.
Yeah, I heard that.
It's going to be a great expo. Greer's going to be there. Davenport's going to be there.
Oh, God.
Hoagland's going to be there. Friedman, Dean, Escamilla, Lear. I think, what, you send them a list of your guests or something and said just invite these people?
No, it's the other way around. I have had most of the cream of the crop of ufology on this program at one time or another. So,
well, it's September 4th and 5th, but unfortunately, I have time constraints. I have within 60 days to do this, so I can't carry it over unless I ask for, you know, some kind of adjournment and things. Let me just mention the Bay Area Expo, UFO Expo. Can I give a contact number?
Oh, of course you can. Sure you can.
Okay, you can. Anybody's interested in coming, and it should be a real special event. It's 408. 723-1076. And you can get whatever information, find out anything else about it. It should be something.
Okay, that was area code 408-723-1706.
No, 1076.
1076.
1076. So if that was next month, then we could do it right there as part of the expo, but it's in September. So that's what I wanted to do at Roswell.
What do you think? Here's what we ought to do, Peter.
Go ahead.
Why don't we survey the audience?
Yeah, well, of course.
You like to get email, right?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, fine. Why don't you tell them how to get to your website and register their opinion with you? I mean, it's www.cause.org?
Yeah, org.
You're an organization. That's C-A-U-S.
Yeah.
And now folks, you can also subscribe to the daily free Cause email update.
Updates, yeah.
You know, and they'll come to your mailbox free of charge every day at the same site. And we're linked, of course, to Peter's site on mine right now, so you can go to my site and jump right across to Peter's. But send him some email and answer the same question that he foisted off on me with no notice. Answer that question if you would. These are two well-known people, certainly, both friends, Peter Davenport and Dr. Stephen Greer. Do we force them, if necessary, to reveal the names of the people who know the real story or who say they do? And in the case of Dr. Greer, it's many, many, many people. Boy, it's a tough one, Peter.
You know what? Maybe we can do a show. Maybe the three of us. You can get the three of us on, and we can go back and forth a little bit. Maybe that could save some time and energy and embarrassment and so forth and so on, because I'm sure Peter would come on and voice his opinion and see. I don't know about Dr. Greer, but that might be interesting.
Dr. Greer might come on.
Yeah, well, that'd be interesting.
You know what? I'll bet you, I'd be willing to bet, if I had to put my money somewhere, I'd say they'd both go to jail before they divulge the names.
Well, that I wouldn't let that happen. That'd be crazy. Then I could represent both of them. And we can get a hearing, finally. I can get my day in court that I've been waiting for.
So you wouldn't let it go that far?
No, of course not. That's crazy, you know.
Well, I mean, that is the road you go down when you seek, in effect, to depose somebody. And then, of course, you seek a judge to order them to render this information because they don't have cause not to. And if they don't do it, then they face the wrath of whoever.
Well, that's true. Federal judges are special entities. You know, they're appointed for life.
Yep.
So, yeah, and
they're like a lot of people say they're like little gods.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess they can do whatever they want. And if they feel that any witness is not answering a question that should be answered, then they can hold them in contempt.
And they have done so. Look at what happened to, what's her name, in the Clinton case. She spent, 18 months in jail or something.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
so something like that could get out of control.
Yeah. Well, this is maybe a first step in not having that happen. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was going to subpoena a third person, Dr. Michael Wolff, but through different sources I put out that I wanted to speak to him, he spoke to me, and we eliminated the need for him to be served with a subpoena.
So what do you know?
I know that there would be no point in me subpoenaing him. Let's put it that way. In other words, the information he comes out with is really not firsthand; it's hearsay. So
you're only after firsthand information.
Oh yeah, I need names. He has no names for me. He just was stating some projects and some organizations and groups. But basically, there's nothing that he told me and that I asked. See, I was able to ask him questions. He answered all my questions. As long as he answers all my questions, I can make that determination whether his information would be good in the deposition. It wouldn't be. So it's very possible that Greer's information is not the type I would need. But you see, Peter Davenport is the significant witness in this case because he has the names and he knows the people who work for this agency, who have come out and made statements like this.
Mm-hmm.
So you said at the beginning of the show you had a question for me, and you had this weird kind of laughter. Do you still remember those questions?
No, I don't.
Oh, I do.
You know, you blew me away so badly with what you just did. I had a cutesy little question for you, but it's just got blown away.
All right.
And I'm still, you know, you put me into really deep thought about...
Well, that's why I'm here.
About the ethics of...
What a friend's for.
Yeah, this is what attorneys are for, I think.
You know, I should have taped this tonight, and I could have used this on my internet show, the 30-minute show.
Oh, that's right. You've got an internet show now, don't you?
Yeah, it's coming together. It's on the Extraordinary News Network. I'm going to have a 30-minute internet show so that each week for 30 minutes I will be interviewing different people. And as a matter of fact, I spoke to Richard Hoagland last week, and that's going to be up at the site. And you just go to the site and access Real Audio, and you can hear me for 30 minutes interview different people. Hopefully I'm going to get the U.S. attorney and the case on and you know, certain other people, maybe some witnesses and things like that. So it's interesting. It's different.
Do you really think you've got a good chance of breaking this open this way?
Well, there are different reasons I bring these lawsuits. Number one, to get information, and lately we're not getting that information. They've closed the file cabinets, and they keep it locked under the theory that it's not reasonable to go into those file cabinets, and all they have to do is be reasonable. But there's a second reason, and that is to bring attention to what cause is all about, to try to bring these people out of the closets to share their experiences, and that's what the cause updates and the cause website does. And that's what cause is all about. Any way to end secrecy. The more people you have in an organization, the easier it is to get whatever objectives you want to achieve.
I remember my question now.
Okay.
I gave you, without naming it, the name of an operation, an operational name, for you to file a Freedom of Information request, and I know you have done that.
Are you psychic? Are you psychic? I got the DOD response right here in my hand. I received it in the mail today.
You're kidding.
Nope, right here. And it says, this is an interim response to your Freedom of Information Act request received, blah, 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 blah. Bottom line is, they have the request, and they will take it in the normal channel. And that's why I bring lawsuits. I don't.
In other words, they didn't really tell you a damn thing. They said, that's sort of like saying, we got your mail, thank you.
Okay, but interestingly, there's a name of a person with a phone number. So now I can call this person.
Oh,
and,
really?
Oh, yeah, and talk to him about what it is that I want.
Do they normally supply that?
No, as a matter of fact, the form, it said FOIA Action Officer, and that's all normally it said. That was crossed out and written in as the name of a person. Which is interesting, right? So I guess it's like a message, why don't you call me and let's talk about this. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to, you know, call him and I'm going to – you see, that's what I did in all the prior lawsuits. I would work with the person doing the search, and I would suggest places to search. And it was easier with Corso because he was alive at that particular time.
Of course, yes.
But now I have no idea where to tell them to look for this information. That's why I need these witnesses. That's why I need some assistance. At least tell me, where should I tell them to look for the information?
Well, the difference in their response thus far is you've got a name, you've got a number. What do you make out of that?
You're talking about this last one?
Yes, sir, the one I gave you, the operational name I gave you, yes.
Well, we talked about this, and you thought something else would happen, right?
Well,
that hasn't happened.
Well, don't rule it out.
No, I don't rule it out. They have to find me first, though. But, no, this is...
I mean, what do you infer from the fact that you got a name and a number?
Well, that they want me to contact the person. Otherwise, they would have left it FOIA Action Officer. For
yeah, you see, here we go. I think occasionally, Peter, that these FOIA requests succeed because the government has decided they actually want this information out. So they take the request as an opportunity to supply information instead of having a press conference.
I think you're correct. They did that in the CIA case in 1978.
Yeah.
You know, they did exactly that. And they wanted the documents out. They had them. It was a public relations problem because everybody knew they had them. So this was the way to get them out. And that's what I'm hoping for. as long as there's a legal remedy that I can pursue, I'll pursue it. You know, that's what I do. That's what I'm here to do. That's what cause is all about. I have a professional responsibility. Every once in a while, it conflicts with my, you know, personal preferences, and that's the problem.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to have Peter Davenport on the program Thursday night, Friday morning, I believe. I'm pretty sure that. That's what I set up. He's coming back from New Jersey, and I'm going to have him on the program, and I am going to discuss all this with him and get his take on it. So,
when is he on? What time?
First hour.
Okay, I'll be listening.
I bet you will.
Yeah, Thursday, right?
Right. And,
I'll be in California, but I'll listen.
You'll find me. And I might even make an attempt to get Dr. Greer on and react to this.
Great.
He, you never know, Peter. He might even welcome it.
Well, why don't you be the mediator, the arbitrator, the judge, you know? Let's do something.
All right.
Okay?
All right. Listen, folks, you want to know more about Wildman Gersten here? You go up to my website, go down until you see Peter Gersten's name and the cause website link. Click on it. Go over there. For heaven's sakes, fill out the little thing with your email address. You'll get a free update every single day. And if you want to contribute something to cause financially, a little help, then they would send it where very quickly, Peter?
CAUS, Post Office Box 20351, Sedona, Sedona, Arizona, 86341.
All right. Listen, my friend, thank you.
It's been a pleasure again.
It's been wild. Thanks,
wild.
Peter. See you later.
Good night.
Good night. We'll be right back.
When I was young, it seemed like life was so wonderful. A miracle, oh, it was beautiful, magical. And all the birds in the trees, they were singing so happily. Oh, joyfully, oh.
You're listening to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies may call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-8033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at 775-727-1222. And the wild card line is 775-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is Premier Radio Network.
Burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. Perhaps all these things in our memory is hard, and the wisdom to come.
Want to take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call out on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Now.
You know, various prophets have said the King of Terror comes in the seventh month. Some believe that'll be July, some September, or some point in between. But here, right at the very end of June, I've got the King of Terror, Ed Deems. I doubt he would bill himself that way, although once they called him... They call him Dr. Doom. Ed Doom Deems. And he is a remote viewer. Do you know what a remote viewer is? Maybe not. We will give you Remote Viewing 101 and then launch into what we're going to do tonight. And I know one of the things that he's going to be talking about. You remember the other night when we had a Mr. Kelleher who talked about what Bob Bigelow was doing? Well, Ed's taking a look at all that. And he'll have some definite words on that. I'm sure about the sun, too. A lot going on the sun. So Ed Deems will be with us shortly. Well, okay, here we go. He's not really the king of terror. Or maybe he is. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Dr. Doom at your service.
Yes, indeed. Great always to hear your voice. There are few shows I enjoy doing as much as the ones I do with you, Ed. I don't know why. You're just my kind of guy for some reason. I really do enjoy your
talent.
Well,
we have many of the same interests.
I think
UFOs is the primary one.
That's absolutely true. Now, we have to do this, you know, for the audience. I mean, we just have to, because otherwise I'll get emails saying, what's remote viewing? And I know we've explained it so many times, but give it your best 101 short shot. You were in the government remote viewing program.
I was the operations and training officer for this country's remote viewing program, the Psychic Spies, a very secret unit.
Which went on for, what, 20 years?
The research part went on for about 10 years, and there was an overlap of several years between its operational employment and research, and the operations went on for about 8 years.
So a couple of years short of 20 years.
Right.
And our tax dollars paid for all of that.
They did.
And you were the operations officer for that unit.
And the training officer.
Yes,
I was both. It was my job to teach remote viewing to the officers in the unit who became the actual PSI spies, and I was one of them.
Now, this was the ability of you and others to, for example, view, I don't know, a gas canister in Iraq or the location thereof, or a person, or something or another. In other words, you guys are really disciplined psychics, is what I like to call you.
That's pretty close to what we were. Actually, the techniques that we adopted is a set of very rigorous perception management techniques, and this allows us, as remote viewers, to open a window into our unconscious mind. The unconscious part of our own minds.
Sure.
Into the collective unconscious, where we can search out anything, a person, a place, a thing, or an event, all of which exist as a pattern of information. For instance, something may not have even happened yet as an event, but it still exists as a pattern of information. So there's very little difference in the collective unconscious between something that has already manifested, let's say, in the past, and something that is a given, a fait accompli in the future.
Would you mind giving us a brief explanation of collective unconscious?
The unconscious part of our own minds, actually, mind, there's only one mind, and it's a universal mind. You can call it the mind of God if you want, but our consciousness is plugged into that, except there's a liminal gate, a barrier that separates all the information in the universe from our bicameral brains because we can't process that much information. Let's say, for instance, that a young person takes a hallucinogenic drug like
yes,
ecstasy.
Right.
Well, that breaks down that liminal barrier and allows all this unconscious information to start flowing into conscious awareness. But it's so much.
It's overload.
It's way overload. It's burnout city. Mm-hmm. Burns out all the circuits, and so we can't operate like this in our physical world, the world that we live in. So we take there's a little bit of a streaming effect from unconscious my vice president calls it a trickle-down effect, mm-hmm. where bit by bit we get this information, this universal information.
A lot of women call it intuition.
Yes. It is intuition. It's also the kind of things that filter in, are filtered out by our dreams at night, but of which part is very accurate.
So in other words, there is a great single connective mind out there, and our unconscious minds are all part of that. And then there is a separation between our unconscious and our conscious minds, a sort of a protective barrier, because we could not handle all that information. Witness people tripping out on LSD, as you pointed out.
Correct.
That's all correct?
All correct. Yes, and what we did in the military was to use these techniques to be able to jump over remotely in space and time, particularly in spy operations, to find out what the bad guys were doing or to locate hostages or terrorists.
Sure.
What I did after I left the military unit was to refine the techniques to allow the techniques to be used for problem solving. So they became very powerful. And error correcting.
Problem solving like disappeared persons, murders, police investigations of various sorts, I suppose finding lost treasure. What kind of problems?
Let's see. What happened to – how did Amelia Earhart disappear? What made TWA Flight 800 crash? And it's a three-part operation. We have to know how to search this collective unconscious. We have to know the right way to do that. That's setting up the problem like it would be an internet or library search.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have the skill, the knowledge, which is trained. That's what my company does exclusively. That's all that we do. We train people how to use this tool. That is a skill. And then we have to know how to analyze the information. And that is almost an art. And all of that is taught by our company. Mistakes can be made in either one of any of those three different areas that are part of this operation called technical remote viewing.
Mistakes can be made, but under certain conditions, you claim 100% accuracy rate, right?
That's correct.
And what are those conditions versus the mistakes can be made?
If you have a team of trained remote viewers with controls, that is, that two-thirds of the team are blind to the target. They do not know what the target is. You simply give these people a random set of numbers, and they work the problem. They're taking the task off of the taskmaster's mind.
Mm.
For instance, they're going – that part is telepathy. They're telepathically connecting with the taskmaster's mind to know what the target is, because unconscious knows. Unconscious knows everything. But our conscious awareness doesn't.
So if you were to give the remote viewer the target as opposed to giving it to him mentally, then you would pollute the information you would receive. Is that accurate?
Almost always that's the case. For professionals like myself, you could front load the problem, and I would not have that much of a problem dealing with it unless it were an emotional issue.
An emotional issue.
Yes. For instance, if someone had abducted one of my sons.
Oh, I see.
Then I would not be able to really be effective in locating my son because I would be too emotionally distraught on the problem. Also, ethical issues, too, arise. For instance, in addition to mistakes, like, for instance, when we've worked many missing persons and had to have we told many wives and husbands that either their children or spouses were dead and the manner of death. And that's not – I mean, we're the only ones in the world that will do that, that have that kind of confidence rates.
Let me take you back on one that you did do. You remember the Iron Butterfly band member?
Philip Kramer.
Yes.
We had to tell his sister that her brother was dead. That's number one. We told Kathy Kramer that her brother was dead. We told Kathy Kramer that he was killed in his van within the environs of Los Angeles. But we also said that the body was in Montana, buried in Montana.
Yes.
Now, let me tell you, that was an analytical error on my part. That was my mistake. That wasn't an error of remote viewing. And the reason that happened was the following. Once my team finds that a person is dead,
yes,
I'm no longer interested in that, as much interested in that person as much as the foul play. I want the bad guys, and I want the bad guys as fast as possible while the trail is still hot.
Mm-hmm.
And in Philip Kramer's case, a couple of things added complexity to the problem. One was that he was involved with some bad elements. In fact, Philip Kramer was being blackmailed. Now, the Santa Barbara police nor his sister know this, but that is the case, and I'm not going to go into to any detail about that.
Well,
those people were killers, and they had actually killed other people, and one of the people that they killed was buried in Montana.
Do you know? Oh, so that's how that came.
We slipped looking for the bad guys. This is my analytical mistake. I was so intent on getting the bad guys that I slipped on to someone else that they had killed.
Now maybe you can help me out here, because I know they found the Kramer vehicle, they found a body inside, but I still am not certain that they have made positive identification. Maybe they have now.
Yes, they have.
They have. All right.
They have.
It was
not cause of death.
Not cause of death.
No. We're saying that there was foul play. We're saying that the elements that Philip Kramer was involved in were not good people, and that he was in the process of being blackmailed.
And you're saying that some of the people who did the evil deed also killed somebody else who was, in fact, buried in Montana.
Yes, and that was where I erred. That was my mistake solely. That was not remote viewing's mistake. That was me trying to get the bad guys. And this would have been ironed out. We were working fast and furious, and we had two other missing children cases at the time.
Well, I'm sorry to say you got the main part of it right. He is, obviously.
Well, we better be right when we tell Pat, for instance, the Clifton girl.
West of the Rockies, call toll-free 1-800-618-8255.
That their child was dead, and that the child was submerged beneath a wire grid, which happened to be a waterbed, by the way. She was taped below a waterbed mattress, and that we would find the body, and that the subsequent work we would locate the body, and we would locate the killers. That the killer was found. It was a neighbor boy. Before we needed to complete any work like that, but that's the kind of confidence level we have, and it is easy for us
to determine
in technical remote thing if someone
is dead. There was an arrest made then.
Yes, there was.
Oh, okay.
We had facts.
I hit the button.
We faxed both you and the police.
Yeah, I wanted to let you know I hit the button on that because I wasn't sure, and so now that you're telling me an arrest has been made, fine.
Now, there are other times where there's some quirks in the universal mind, and this is a very interesting one, too. A very, very, very interesting case. And that is the case of Art Bell's reason for departure. You remember that?
Oh, yes, Ed.
We were under a tremendous amount of pressure from the SciTech was to determine what was going on with Art, because everybody felt that you were being blackmailed or something was wrong. We thought there may have been bad guys involved, and that you couldn't talk because someone was in danger. And that was our intent. But the queuing, the way we set up the problem, that was correct. Our remote viewing was also correct. And our analysis was correct.
Well, you said,
but
I had a transformational experience,
yes,
in the sarcophagus in the Great Pyramid. And about that, you are not wrong. I certainly did.
Well, let me tell you what happens in cases like that. In cases where you attempt to go into the private lives of individuals, I mentioned the case once before where Robert Monroe, before he died, asked our military remote viewing team to find out who was attempting to ping him psychically, And in doing that, we had to penetrate Robert Monroe's mind. That is not allowable. There seems to be an ethic involved in this collective mind, this universal consciousness, that disallows us as remote viewers from penetrating the private lives of many people.
Well, as it doesn't get any more private than that, Ed. My son was in crisis, had been assaulted, and was in unbelievable crisis, and that's why I left the air.
But I'm telling you that we, in cases like that, as remote viewers, there is a protection mechanism. Actually, we think it's a guardian angel. That's our guess. We think it is actually the person's guardian angel, that disallows penetration into private matters to that degree. And that's an unusual circumstance. And in fact, ethically, we should, despite our good intent, we should not have taken on that project
at
all.
That's really, really interesting. All right, Ed. Hold it right there. We're going to go to the bottom of the hour. My guest is the King of Terror. The seventh month King of Terror, Dr. Doom. He's Ed Dames, and he'll be right back. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and this is the Unexpected Coast to Coast AM.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
So, Ed, boy, I'm never going to get rid of that. I am never going to allow dead air to happen. So let me try it again. See, I said, oh, Ed. So, Ed, the collective unconscious, I'm really fascinated by that whole concept. It has a kind of a firewall in it then that prevents even people like yourself from looking into extremely emotional things or...
No, that's a personal, that is not a firewall. We think what you're terming a firewall, which is a good term, is angelic in nature. There are traffic cops out there, and the traffic cops are angels.
No.
The emotional situation is a different thing. That is where one's body is has so much noise, let's say, that one could not work.
Well, let's go back to my situation. My son was in a tragic life and death kind of situation. That's when I left the air. If you had come up with that information and made it public, it could have done great harm.
Yes. There's ethics involved.
That's exactly what I'm saying. In other words, you then were prevented from getting that specific information by some collective unconscious angel.
Either that, or there is a dialogue. There was a dialogue between you and my remote viewers.
Yes.
At an unconscious level that said, don't do that. Don't do that to me. I don't want you to do that. And that there was an agreement at another level of our consciousness that shunted our work somewhere else.
No, that makes all the sense in the world to me.
One more thing about the Kramer case. We ceased and desist based upon a request by another member of that family. So had we continued that, we would have caught my Analytica error about where the body was. But we were asked to stop.
Well, unfortunately, you got the big part of it right for the Kramer family. I'm very sorry. And so now, I did a show the other night with a Dr. Kelleher in behalf of the of Bob Bigelow and his foundation, and they are doing some incredible work. Last week I did. And he described a lot of what they're doing, which is just absolutely mind-blowing stuff, and all documented right down to the nines. You know, that's the kind of work they do. They're doing hard science.
That's right. They are.
Now, you told me just before the show that you took a look-see at what they're doing.
More than a look-see. There's a lot I would like to say about that, if you'll bear with me.
Oh, you know I will.
What they are doing, just to revisit the situation, they have discovered, their scouts have discovered a hot spot, a hotbed of, let's call it, enigmatic activity, much of which is associated with what we generally and traditionally call UFO activity.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place where that is going on.
Mm-hmm. Please, I fear you may know where that place is. Please do not give it out.
Absolutely not. I would never do anything like that.
All right.
And for a number of different reasons. One, just out of general, because it's not right. And two, because the public should not be streaming into that place. Now, I'll have a lot to say about that in this program. But the work is very important, and they are the right people to be doing it. But I don't want them to make the mistakes that I made with my scientific teams on two separate occasions in two separate hot spots in the past. Now, these hot spots, these are areas where there are cattle mutilations.
Yep.
There are all kinds of enigmatic things that happen in a very a small geographical area.
Exactly.
Now, the activities in these areas, they peter out. They don't go on forever. So there's a golden opportunity here. I'm going to have some instructions for this team, and I know people on the board of directors there and others, and I want to talk to you, to your listeners, about this and give them some background. When my military team was in Fort Meade, Maryland, and I was the training officer, many times, as I've said on your program in the past several years, I used to slip my trainees a Mickey. And I would give them UFO-related targets as training exercises. These targets were blind, the same way that SciTech trains our students. The trainees don't know what the target is. Their unconscious has to do all the work and produce accurate information about the target. Now, when we did this, we found a hot spot, our first hot spot in the continental United States.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in New Mexico, northern New Mexico. I wish that I had been in the Poconos or somewhere close to Washington, D.C. because of the logistical problems, but it was in northern New Mexico.
Hmm.
So I set out on my own time, on military leave, with other members of the team to go and recon this position. And we did that.
Wow.
Okay. Now, I want to talk a moment about Jacques Vallée. Jacques Vallée, I don't know if you've ever had him on the program, on your program. But
I have, yes.
He is on the Science Advisory Board for NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science.
That's right.
That is involved with this particular site. I don't think in my 16 years of dealing on the inside track and watching from the outside that there is anyone who has come closer to understanding the UFO problem in Jacques Vallée. He didn't without the kind of tools that SciTech has. But he is going to, I think he's going to play a pivotal part in what may end up being real contact, which is ironic because he was the model for Francois Trevant and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Indeed.
So he may actually be the one to effect or facilitate contact. Now, he was in that position with me about 8 years ago or 7 years ago. In fact, I was out on a reconnaissance with him and some other people that I can't mention, brilliant scientists and engineers, some of the best in this country. We were slopping around a very, very slippery, wet, miserable New Mexico night trying to get in a position to observe and overwatch an area near Chaco Canyon, New Mexico, where we had determined via remote viewing, the military team, that there was a hotbed of UFO activity at that time.
Hmm.
In fact, I had not had a chance to really spend any time until that night with Jacques Vallée, and I kept I talked to him a lot, and I called him Jacques.
Can you describe what happened that night?
Well, it was rainy. It was miserable. I kept saying, "Hey, Jock, the Jeep is slipping down this mountain. Hey, Jock, this," until somebody in the back seat said, "My name is Jacques. Jacques, a jock is something you wear for an athletic event, and that is not what my name is." So that broke up the misery of this night, and we were not able to get into position. He had to fly back to California. And then the next two subsequent nights, we were able to get into position and know that we had the right spot. And after that, I brought in a very high-powered scientific team to begin making observations and recordings. And our goal was to validate the existence of the phenomenon, the reality of it, using instruments and recordings.
Of course.
That was our job.
I have one question, if I can just take you back. I mean, here you were in a military program where I would assume, and that's dangerous ground, I know, Ed, that you said you would slip a Mickey's every now and then, like UFOs.
Yes.
And learning of this hotspot. Now,
abduction experiences, things like that.
Yeah. Did you document this?
Yes.
You did?
Well, I have the remote viewing sessions. I have the actual sessions.
I know, but obviously the work you were doing would go in reports to your superiors.
Negative? No, that's not true.
It's not true.
I had to do it under the table. In fact, not only did I do that under the table, but our unit was so close-hold that the people that I needed to get regular strategic intelligence information to by using remote viewing, were not even allowed to be briefed on the existence of the unit for a lot of political reasons, not necessarily for classification.
So then if you had
so I would slip that information under the table also.
Yep, but if you'd been caught, you could have been court-martialed.
I usually had some aces up my sleeve, Art. I mean, like Sergeant Stryker said in The Sands of Iwo Jima, Sergeant Stryker was played by John Wayne.
Yeah.
Life is tough, but it's tougher if you're stupid. And I tried to stay as smart as I could.
That's right. And I'm sure that you could have come up with reasoning for what you did within the program itself.
Yes, advanced training was the pat answer I had when I was caught. And I was caught.
Oh, you were caught?
Yes. Yes, I was caught. In fact,
now, you've never told that story yet.
Well, I don't have to. In Jim Schnavel's book, I think it's called Remote Viewers, The Real X-Files, Remote Viewing Program, he pretty much, through interviews, I've told him that. Yes, I was caught doing that.
Oh. You were not, however, court-martialed.
I was told to stop. No, I was told to stop.
Reprimanded.
I had my wrist slapped. You know, I had some pretty good connections, Art.
Well, look, as far as I'm concerned, it would be irresistible because we have talked before, and you said, look, you would go through arduous gazillions of hours with these military targets, and that's, of course, what the military would have you doing is military targets, and for diversion and for, I guess, your own education, your own curiosity, you're dealing with things here that we all want to know about, basic questions we really all want to know about. And so how could anybody resist.
It was irresistible. But you have to, again, and your listeners, very few of your listeners will believe this, but it's true. The Department of Defense has no charter at all to collect information about UFOs. It went out the door with Project Blue Book, believe it or not.
You're right. I find that hard to believe.
I know, but there's nothing I can do about that. And there'll be a number of things I say tonight. I'm going to have to pull out the stops in a number of places tonight because we're running out of time. This is 1999, and in a certain degree, you have to in the intelligence business, we had to groom our enemy. If we wanted to sell them a bill of goods, we had to groom them and get them to slowly spoon-feed them information to create a certain situation, a paradigm, before we could feed them this last bit of lie. That's called grooming. It works another way, too. It's similar to what in the civilian world I've seen called decompression,
mm-hmm.
where the conspiracy theorists say, well, the government is trying to decompress us. They want to tell us about UFOs, but they can't shove the whole thing down our throats because we'll choke on it, right?
Right.
Well, to a certain degree, that's true. And what I have been doing over the last 3 years on your program, but only because the truth is so – and I'm going to talk about the truth tonight. I can't hold – the stops have to be pulled out now.
The truth is what? No?
The truth is about the nature of the problem and why Jacques Vallée is so important to the understanding of it. And we're going to get to that tonight.
Well, we all want to know about that.
Yes, it is a very interesting thing. It's a very interesting thing indeed. So about 10 years ago, to an inside board of let's call it an MJ-12 type of a board, I wrote a paper, a position paper. That position paper essentially said that we are not going to have contact with that system out there until we understand what they are. Period. That it's like we're like apes. Jacques Vallée put forth the idea that there's a control system out there, and we are not observing it as much as it observing us, and that is what is happening on this ranch that the National Institute for Discovery Science is monitoring. They think they're monitoring this bizarre, enigmatic set ensemble of phenomena, the kinds of things that have been going on for decades, and yet they don't know it, but they're being observed. They're being observed and watched for a change in behavior that would reflect the fact that they understand what they're dealing with. So I'll go slowly tonight.
Oh, boy, Ed. You're saying things that I can't respond to, but you're sending little chills down my spine.
Well, let me go really slowly because it's necessary that I do that with regard to this particular topic tonight. I have some other ones to talk about, but this is an important one. Whitley Strieber, in the book Communion, there's a passage that – there are two passages I will never forget, and they're so meaningful in terms of what I know about the problem. If I can quote him on one from Communion?
Sure.
Okay. He said, I quote, "To really begin to perceive the visitors adequately, it is going to be necessary to invent a new discipline of vision, one that combines the mystic freedom of imagination with the substantial intellectual rigor of the scientist." That is what remote viewing has done. Jacques Vallée has said it, but he hasn't said it as poetically as Whitley, but he has flat out said, we need, perhaps remote viewing is this tool. There's one other passage in the book Communion that's very important.
And that is?
And that is when Whitley describes a point where he is in a sort of a catatonic state, and this bug-eyed gray, for lack of a better word, is looking down at him.
Right.
And in a pitiful voice, perhaps in his own mind, he says or tries to say, "You have no right." In In other words, you have no right to do this to me. And this creature responds by saying, we do. Yes, we do. And I bring up that point because...
because it relates to what you're going to tell us.
Yes. What? I mean, there's very few...
Right.
Yes, and it does, because if something has the right to do this to us, then it had better be our parents or our creator.
That would have been my line.
It very much may well be our creators coming back and watching us. But we'll have more to say about that.
Huh.
Okay, so let's get back to this ranch where these things are happening.
And I never said it was a ranch.
I did. I did.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. But that doesn't give anything away. We're in the West, and it's a ranch.
Well, hold it right there. That'll do. That'll more than do. Well, this is going to be an interesting night, isn't it? We really do all want to know who they are, why they're here, and why in God's name, you know, I hope that's not a pun, they have a right to be doing what they're doing to us. Major Ed Dames is my guest, SciTex Ed Dames. And by the way, if you'll get out a pencil and a paper, the SciTex Corporation has released videotapes that will allow you, that's right, you, to remote view if you wish to. Something you might want to think about very hard. Get out paper and pencil. I'll tell you how to get them.
You're listening to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies may call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-8033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at 775-727-1222. And the wild card line is 775-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is Premier Radio Network.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
And Major Ed Dames, SciTex Major Ed Dames, who knows too much. I've got a quote here from Jacques Vallée. It says here, after a lifetime of research into the question of UFOs, Jacques Vallée wrote his conclusions in Forbidden Science before announcing retirement from the field. Those conclusions were in bold face and italics, the strongest emphasis ever given in his writings. Quote, the UFO phenomena exists. It has been with us throughout history. it is physical in nature and remains unexplained in terms of contemporary science. It represents a level of consciousness that we have not yet recognized and which is able to manipulate dimensions beyond time and space as we understand them. It affects our own consciousness in ways that we do not grasp fully, and it generally behaves as a control system, end quote. Ed Dames will be right back. Ed Dames, SciTech's major Ed Dames, so in a moment we're going to tell you how to get the videotapes because everybody, virtually everybody can remote view, so we're going to tell you how to get them. Prepare your pencil and paper. In the meantime, Ed, I read this quote from Jacques Vallée, and the part I'm interested in, he absolutely says it's a real phenomenon. Then he says, it affects our own consciousness in ways that we do not fully grasp, and it generally behaves as a control system. Very interesting. Can you explain what he meant?
I will by illustration, but I want to reiterate that it's time for Jacques to come out of retirement because there is no one in the field, and I know the field well, inside and out, that is closer to the truth than Jacques Vallée. He's brilliant when it comes to being able to suss out, albeit without the tools that the technical remote viewing tool that finally added the final piece of the puzzle, he came the closest. He should be the one on the ground when contact is finally facilitated, and I am going to instruct that team how to do that.
All right. Let's dive into the meat of this. I mean, all of us, every one of us, want to know. I think I've passed pretty much the threshold of belief that we are indeed being visited, that something is here. I've just too many years of it, too many people, too many eyewitness testimonies, too many videos, too many pictures, and then my own experience. So, you know, I'm almost at the same place Jacques Vallée is with regard to belief in the phenomena, but I don't begin to understand it.
And you throw your hands up in frustration and
frequently
and give up.
Frequently.
Yeah.
I don't know about giving up, but I do. I throw my hands up in frustration.
It's because we are stuck on the learning curve. We are stuck on the learning. This is a control system, and it needs to see different behavior. It's a carrot and stick approach, and we don't get a new carrot unless we behave differently. I'm going to talk about that tonight.
We don't get a new carrot unless we behave differently.
Mm-hmm. What do we want from this? Well, our deepest desires is contact. That's what everybody wants, contact. The intent, however, in the field is not contact per se. That's why I threw out my two teams, my scientific teams, because they were not interested in contact. They were interested in those magnificent machines that they perceived. They wanted that technology to take back and build, to have the military-industrial complex built.
Well,
that is
that.
What their intent was.
Sure.
And that is why I abandoned them.
I see. I believe that. I have no problem believing that at all. The military does what the military does. And if they have an opportunity to get advanced technology and a leg up on a competitor, as in an enemy, they go for it. That's what
they
do.
It wasn't just the military. Half of my team was NASA. Very gifted, some of the leaders at NASA. So it was both the military-industrial community and NASA scientists, as well as civilian scientists, pure, straight, across-the-board physicists, some of the best going.
There have been a lot of people, Ed, that have written books saying that contact is not something that we should want, that nearly as they can tell, based on behavior, based on what we've seen with abductions and all the rest of it, that contact wouldn't necessarily be a good thing, that these are not necessarily friends of ours.
Regardless of that, that's still what we all desire. More than anything, we still want contact. Think about that. It's true. We all want contact. That's why we stay in this business.
Even if it means that when we get that contact and we find out what it's really all about, that we're talking about beings that created us.
Possibly, yes. Possibly our own creators.
I don't think we're ready for that information. I really don't. And hearkening back now to the NIDS survey, the big survey, they had a big survey done, a big enough that it was a 2-point something or another error margin. And they said that 8 out of 10 Americans believe the government would absolutely hide the information if they had it. And not all that many people necessarily want contact. The majority of people certainly believe there's something out there, but I don't know about wanting contact.
I think that I'm familiar with the survey. I know the people that conducted it, but I'm suggesting that there may be a new sense of urgency here in terms of our survival, vis-a-vis what's coming, what you call the quickening. And
well, you said, and it sticks with me, all bets are off in 99. And
this system out there is far more aware of what's over the horizon. In fact, they may be the very engineers of what's over the horizon. Who knows? But we're not going to know anything unless we have a tete-a-tete with them. A coffee clash.
When will this occur? Will this occur this year? Will we know something substantial before this year is out?
I am going to provide instructions tonight for the first time before I sit down with the people on the Scientific Advisory Board at NIDS. I'm going to provide instructions to them over the air on your show on how they can effect contact as far as SciTech is concerned.
All right. Look,
based upon my
mistakes
in the past and based upon a remote viewing today.
All right. I want to be able to tell people about your videotapes. I don't know, how long has it been now, Ed? 3 years? When did you actually release these tapes? Remind me, how long ago now?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. You released a series of videotapes in modules to instruct the general public how to do what you do. And the first one is very reasonable. I have watched the first one. I can attest to the production values of it. It's incredible. I mean, when you watch this tape, there is no question in your mind that what lays before you, if you wish it, is real. And there's enough in this first tape to help you make a decision, or absolutely to help you make a decision about whether you really want to go forward and learn remote viewing or not. And that first tape is pretty reasonable. How much?
$49.95,
yeah. That's module one?
That's module one. Now, when you say reasonable, you mean reasonably priced.
I do, yes. I do.
Because there's a difference between being reasonable and reasonable.
Well, actually, it's both. It's reasonable in content. In just the sense that I gave, in other words, when you are done viewing that, you will know whether you wish to proceed and really know how to remote view based on what you see and hear. You'll know. Or whether you – and it's not for everybody, is it?
I don't think so. I think it's as – that's apropos as contact is not for everybody.
Right.
In the context of what we're about to discuss.
So $49.95, and you'll know, believe me. And then if you really want to go on and take the full course, the price then is pretty expensive, but not compared to what – I mean, remote viewing courses used to cost thousands of dollars. In fact, when I was on the air early with you and with other remote viewers, it was thousands of dollars. And so the rest of the tapes, how much?
There are 5 training tapes, about 10 hours of instruction, about 4 months of at-home training, and we include a free a background tape called The Impossible Challenge, a history of the company, a cross-section. And there's a $70 off sale on that. So the full price for 6 tapes is
$249.95. Wow. $249.95 for the whole thing. Okay, if they would like to take that step, they can call, I guess, a couple of numbers, right?
there are two numbers, and do you have your choice of those two numbers of either a live operator or an automated system if you're shy?
And by the way, that $249.95, so everybody knows, that's all six tapes, the whole thing. You get $70 off.
Yes, and that was edited and directed by an Oscar nominee, a documentarian.
I know, it blew me away. That's what I said. The production values are just really superb. Anyway, the numbers are 1-888-878-0333. Now, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm doing it this time because you screwed it up last time.
Sorry.
Or 1-877-878-1777. Yes?
Correct. Thank you.
Let me do it one more time. That's 1-888-878-0333 or 877, that's toll-free number, 877-878-1777. All right, let's do it.
Okay, again, these hotbeds of activity, they peter out. If we don't show a demonstrable rise in the learning curve as participants at these sites, the activity ceases. I've been at two such sites in the past 10 years that we discovered through technical remote viewing, brought scientific teams in there to observe activity.
Right.
Again, our agenda, our modus operandi was to gather enough information using various instruments that would determine for the rest of the scientific community, that would convince the rest of the scientific community that we were dealing with something that was unequivocally real and repeatable. We could go to the same site and make repeated observations.
May I ask a quick question?
Of course.
How can you be sure, Ed, or are you sure, maybe is a better way of asking it, that you are not actually the causative agent to these things occurring?
There is an interaction.
Yeah, surely you must have.
At each of the sites. In fact, that's one of the things that we've learned. The interaction is the most important thing at each of these sites.
Uh-huh.
It is the most important thing. And that, furthermore, as I've already mentioned, we're the ones that are being observed. And all of the smoke and mirrors that we see out there is just that they're red flags and little messages to see if we can collect the meanings correctly. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
The Bigfoot phenomenon.
Yes.
The Chupacabra phenomenon.
Yes.
Those are projections. They are temporary projections into physical reality. They're real momentarily, and then they're gone. But their creations are by this system.
And the purpose?
There is a message there, and then there's a meaning. The message is in the specific event itself, but there's a meaning behind it that can only be discerned by using consciousness tools. And I'll let remote viewers do that for themselves, because that's not something I should give away. I'll be talking about the heavy-duty, hardcore meanings tonight, not Bigfoot and Chupacabra. You don't want to give everything away. Let people who learn remote viewing find out what the meanings of each of those events are. And when you do that, the specific event, that specific event, not all of the Bigfoot or all of the Chupacabra appearances in general, each one of the appearances and events has a specific message and a specific meaning. The system does that. Some of them are redundant, but some of the meanings are not. They're discrete. Okay.
Is it a way of testing our preparedness?
It's a way of testing our intelligence, Art. It's a way of testing our intelligence, our wisdom, our IQs. To see if we understand. And if we don't, the phenomenon continues to repeat, but not always in the same place. It moves on to another group, another place geographically where a different group of people are to see if it can find a higher IQ, someone that another fish that jumps out and says, I got it.
Since the phenomena appears to be increasing, my conclusion would be that, for the most part, thus far, we have failed.
We have failed. There appears to be a prime directive out there. It's like you can't have this information handed, information being what the system is, what it wants to tell you about ourselves, mankind, what it wants to tell you about itself. It can't be handed to you on a platter. It's presented as a conundrum, just like Christ presented parables.
Sure.
Some people said, well, I don't know what he's talking about. I just came here for the fish.
Mm-hmm.
Other people said, well, you know, let's see, what did he mean by that? It gives me a headache to think about. But there were a few people that went home from these parables, and they could not sleep night after night after night until they got it, until they figured it out. Because it takes work. Learning is work, and life is a learning experience. And the system is trying to teach us something, but it's not handing wisdom to us on a platter. We've got to do work, and we're rats in this little laboratory, and not all rats are going to get the message. Collectively, we may have to one of these days to survive, and I think that point is almost upon us.
Almost there. All right. Mm-hmm. On that note, stay right there, Ed, and we'll be right back. Major Ed Dames, Sci-Tex, Major Ed Dames is my guest. He was a remote viewer for our government and now in the private sector. He's in the Hawaiian Islands, on the Hawaiian Islands, actually. Maybe one day in them if things don't work out. We'll be right back.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
All bets are off at 99. That's already a given. And one good idea for you would be to store a little bit of food, and we've got the best storable food company around. They've been in business for 18 years. 18 years, long time before Y2K was even thought of publicly. People were hiding it back then. They knew it was going to happen, but nobody talked about it. Actually, that's something that we're going to discuss with Ed tonight, too. Not just Y2K, but the certain, you know, the switch on of Y2K and then the switch off of Y2K and the spotlight going elsewhere. It's really quite remarkable. All right, tomorrow night we're going to have Marcia Schaefer here, by the way, and she's written a book called Confessions of Intergalactic Anthropologist. And she is a very, very, very articulate person who was, by the way, recommended by Peter Gersten to me. And then on Thursday night, Friday morning, we're going to have Roy A. Tucker here, who's going to be discussing, he's got a bachelor's in physics and a master's in scientific instrumentation, works at an observatory, and he's going to be discussing near-Earth asteroids and our sun. And our sun, which is something that we're going to be talking with Ed about before this morning is out as well. However, let's go back now to Sci-Tex Major Ed Dames. And Ed, Debbie writes the following, very short. Ed, I think we've always had contact, the aliens type of contact. They're simply tending their herd, and they're not going to talk to us any more than we talk to cows or lab rats. We are not their equals. Does she have it right?
I don't think so.
Good, good.
What would she mean by tending their herd? And
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Oh, good. Good. I didn't want to think of it that way myself. However, are they tending their creations?
I think that Jacques Vallée has it right, that there has been a conditioning process throughout history, a bootstrapping process. I think that visionary science fiction writers like Arthur C. Clarke were on to something when they wrote 2001 and books like that. They really were. Their imagination was pulling not from their own conscious memories, but a lot from the universal mind.
Everybody who is a science fiction fan knows, most science fiction of the past has come to be reality, almost all of it. Not all of it, but a healthy portion.
Well, again, I think that the most brilliant scientist in ufology that I know is Vallée, and I think he is on. I think he should be the one, and will be the one, we pull him out of retirement, to effect contact at that hot zone as long as this window of opportunity exists.
I wonder if you really retire from something like that.
Well, he retired in frustration. He quit
yes.
in frustration. There was just, he could not go any further because he ran out of tools. So what I'm going to provide them with is bait. What bait to use?
Bait, huh?
Yes, to set out that is so attractive that it will elicit contact.
All right. Instruct them.
Okay. The mistakes that I made with my team were we were trying to study the technology, to observe it.
Right.
And that was childish, it turned out. Very, very childish. For instance, Kelleher mentioned that there was an individual, one of their observers, who had Generation 3 night vision devices.
That's correct, yes.
And Generation 3 nods, who observed this a dark entity crawling out of a light tube. That the tube began as a glowing yellowish-green spot and then formed the tube, and this entity crawled out and disappeared.
That's correct.
Okay. And then there was the event at that same area of the television camera that went on the blink, and when they went to check it, they found that all of the masking tape had disappeared. Wires ripped out of
right.
the camera, those kinds of things.
That's right.
Well, the wires were I'm telling you that the system that we're dealing with is nominally 100 million years ahead of us. So we are less than children when it comes to this. We notice the same thing in the Department of Defense. You know that DOD does have, and so does the National Reconnaissance Office, we do have photographs of UFOs. They are classified. That's all that we have. It's just photographs. Now, many of the photographs were taken using, let's say, the old KH-9 satellites, the spy satellites, right?
Yes. If there are UFOs, then these KH series satellites, even the older ones, damn well would have had photographs of them. There's no doubt about it. They could not have missed them.
That's right. And they were in a special file, and they just stay there because we talked about this before. What is classified is what the satellites were looking at, and also some of the technologies are still classified, even though the satellites were replaced by newer generation models. Well, this is what we observed in DOD. The phenomenon that were recorded sporadically that we called UFOs, they disappeared when a new platform, a newer generation platform was put up. The newer generation platform would have much more improved optics and acquisition devices. And now the phenomenon, as if to tease us, would appear only on the new platform's cameras, you see.
Well, if
so
you're 100...
we're being toyed with.
Yeah, if you're 100 million years ahead of us, you can play a lot of games if you want to.
That's correct. And that, and they are. It's nonsense, absolute nonsense. But the nonsense has to change in order to keep the viewer ratings up. People will fall into an ennui. They will become very bored if we see the same chupacabra all the time. If we just get Bigfoot, oh, another Bigfoot sighting. Oh, another this. We need to have novelty. In experimental psychology, we know in my business that novelty acts as a stimulus. Okay,
and so we're getting it.
Yes. So we have a cow, for instance, cattle, with its eyes ripped out. And we have a camera with its eyes ripped out. There's a message there. If the ears are remote viewing, then you'll know. We are losing our ability to see. That's the meaning there. The cow's heart was shredded from the inside out. We're losing our hearts.
Well, you were listening very carefully, weren't you?
Yes, to that program I was. Unfortunately, I'm an Art Bell addict, but I've been so busy lately that I haven't had the time to catch a lot of your shows, but I did fortunately catch that
one. You sure caught that one.
Yeah. And those are good people. They are unimpeachable observers. Robert Bigelow and his staff have put together a superb team of people, some of them who I know well. And they're the best in the business. So they've got the right people. They're on the right hot spot. They've got a window of opportunity here. And now I'm going to tell them what date to set out to get these buggers to land like I could not do 10 years ago.
All right. The bait.
Okay. The bait, what we're dealing with, it's not a matter of technology. The contact's not about technology. It's about meanings and values. They're looking for the right response on our part before they come forward a little bit closer to us and allow any higher degree of contact.
Intellectual or spiritual response, what?
Just like Valet said, at every level of our being, physical reality, spiritually, and consciousness, all levels at the same time, Art. It's a very powerful system out there.
And how do we manage to get how much consciousness or what percentage of consciousness of human beings has to be raised to that level before contact will occur?
Only one individual.
Only
one person would do it.
Only one.
But it has to be, the results will be collective, but it only has to be one. And in this case, it's going to be a small group, and that's fine, because that's all that it should be. The rest of us would ruin it for them. But we need a spokesperson, and that right spokesperson is Jacques Vallée, because he is the one that understands it. And he does have the experience to translate it into terms that the layperson can understand as much as possible. So here we go.
One discussion we had was what would happen at the moment of contact, depending on how it was broken to us. In other words, if a CNN anchor, you remember that, came on and announced contact, there would be disruption. There would be, no doubt, rioting and looting and killing and raping and maiming and whatever.
It won't be that way. It'll be much more subtle, and it'll be much more controlled. It will not be the kind of contact that you think.
No CNN anchor saying, oh, no. My God, it's hovering above Houston or whatever.
No. It'll be an intelligent man like Vallée, who is already recognized as someone who is the expert by both the entertainment industry as well as his fellow peers who respect him greatly. That's the right person. That's the right person to bring the message out from that controlled area.
How soon, Ed?
Well, we'll see. We'll see if they do it the right way. But they need the right bait, and they don't have that yet. For instance, you know, Colm Kelleher was saying you asked him in your program, in your interview, what they're looking for, and he said, we want to understand the physics. Wrong answer. The physics can be matched at every level, every single level. So that's the wrong answer. We're doing it the wrong way. Okay? Here's the right way, Art.
Go.
We need to set some bait out. And the bait has to represent higher, we have to get much smarter. It has to represent a lot of wisdom on our part. In fact, it has to represent the idea that we know what their modus operandi is as well And that's what it has to be. It's got to be something. It has to be something that has been unchanged and that it's mutually recognized and accepted by both the system, okay, which is possibly millions and millions of years ahead of us and possibly the agents of our own design, okay, performing product testing on us perhaps. It's got to be recognized by all mankind as the most meaningful element of humanity and the most powerful symbol connected to our race throughout time, and something that, despite the vast changes in culture and science, has remained unchanged until now, when it's coming, it's starting to actually be threatened by destruction, by our own folly. We put this bait out, and we'll be able to elicit contact in a no-nonsense way. That, and the way we do it is this. They go into that area on that ranch,
yes,
that, the center of mass of the activity, and in a tent, they place the bait. The bait can't have any recording devices or any transmitting devices, and you know, let's not kid ourselves. They're going to know if there's anything hidden. Who are we kidding here? And nothing, no electronic devices with the bait. The bait stays in the tent for 24 hours. The observers back off about a mile, and they can observe from a mile away. After about 24 hours, they recover the bait and examine it for contact.
What is the bait, Ed? In other words, for a moment I thought it was Jacques Vallée.
No.
No.
No, no, no. It can't
no,
be a
no,
man.
No. All right.
It can't be a man.
It
because
can't be
look,
a man.
A man represent man, the male element on this planet. What does it represent? It represents pillage, plundering, rape. Men, that's what men have come to symbolize.
Yeah, but otherwise.
Destruction and death.
Otherwise, we're all right, though.
Yeah, we're fine. No, it has to be a mother and child.
Oh, my.
That's the bait.
A mother and child.
A mother and child by themselves, no instrumentation, alone. A mile away, no closer.
Whew. And what, of what nature do they have to be? In other words, a mother and child who are in some way prepared for this as
no,
you would as you would
no, no because
no?
The meaning alone aren't you're missing the picture here. The meaning alone, it is the first step to contact. It is square one in communication. The love that exists, the bond that exists between a mother and
the
child
uh-huh.
is the strongest force in humanity. It is the beginning and the end of our civilization. It's square one. It's the Alpha and the Omega. It's the most meaningful thing that we could place out there, the most powerful thing.
You never fail to blow me away. You never fail to do it, and now you've done it again.
Dr. Robert John at Princeton University, at the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Project, he, in all of his years of trying to understand psychokinesis in the PK laboratory,
yes,
he and Dr. Brenda Dunn, have come to the conclusion that it appears that the psychokinetic effect is strongest when in the vicinity of a couple in love. Well, he actually said that to the scientific community. There goes his reputation, but there goes his science. That's the end of the project. That's essentially the end of the project. Because science deals with mind, not emotions. Emotions belong to the body. That's the end. There's no integration, mind and body, in science today. And so he actually said that. And he also quoted Einstein. And he quoted Einstein by saying, I quote, "Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind."
Yes.
That's Albert Einstein. So the great thinkers of our time, Einstein, Robert John, Jacques Vallée, they're on to this. They are the vanguard. They're the ones that know, but they're being pulled down by the system.
Then, if I'm trying to understand, then the bait, as you call it, a mother and child, the strongest union that one can imagine.
And the most meaningful element of humanity.
No question about it.
Mm-hmm.
Would be understood alone in this tent with observers a mile away would be understood by them to be the key. In other words, we would have risen to
the occasion. The occasion that would allow the next step in our understanding. It would be a new carrot. The contact would arise probably with the mother and child. Not necessarily, but by doing that with our intent of here, we, you know, this is what we have to offer you. Think of the fantasy stories where you stake out the virgin for the dragon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You need to propitiate a dragon. Well, in legends of old, you put a virgin out there. And these days, we a mother and child, which represents our knowledge of what is most important to our humanness and to humanity in general, although we're starting to monkey with that these days. And that may be, you know, that may cause our demise. But this whole system is presenting itself as a conundrum, a challenge. Think of the Sphinx with a riddle. The Sphinx has a riddle. If you don't, or the troll. If you don't answer the troll's riddle, you can't cross the bridge, and he eats you. The Sphinx eats you if you can't answer the riddle. But if you answer it, you get the object of your desire. The king gives you his daughter if you answer the riddle. If you don't, your head's off. Those kinds of things. It's that kind of fantasy brought up to a much higher level. A level that may mean our survival or survival of a good part of the human race, I suspect.
So then this has to actually occur pretty soon, doesn't it?
Window will close. If they continue to demonstrate what we did and my team did, but of taking observation up to a new level of technology with microwave recording devices, electromagnetic field change devices, magnetic field change, you name it, IR, ultraviolet recording, it's just going to disappear and peter out because it means that we do not understand what their modus operandi is, which is to tell us who we are, all right? To tell us who we are first,
yeah, that's
and then who they are.
That's the end game. I think for us, even more important than who they are is who we are.
Yes, that's what important to us. Yes, and Jacques Vallée, ironically because Close Encounters of the Third Kind has a model for him. This Professor Trevant, I think his name was, or Francois Trevant, was actually modeled after Jacques Vallée, and Vallée
also
happens to be on the Science Advisory Board for NIDS, and NIDS. It's in possession of this particular target area right now.
He's
possession loosely. So it's a very, very interesting idea. Very interesting indeed. They need to act.
Wow.
If they don't, it will disappear. We may or may not have another opportunity somewhere else.
All right. Hold on, Ed.
Choose the spot. We don't.
I've got you. Hold on. Now, I wouldn't have guessed that one in a million years. And yet, as you listen to it, maybe a part of you knows that Ed's right. The bait, the understanding, the demonstration, the bait. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. We're not done. We'll go to the phone shortly. Ed Dames is my guest. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies may call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-8033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at 775-727-1222. And the wild card line is 775-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is Premier Radio Network.
First-time callers may reach Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye at 1-775-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. And boy, what a surprise I've got coming for you. Stay right there. Never, never break the chain. Well, all right. As I said, never fails. Ed always manages to come on here and blow me away. And we were talking about the show we did with Colm Kelleher last week about NIDS, which is financed largely by Bob Bigelow, who does a lot of very good, quiet work. He's not public about it. He's very private person. Very nice guy, and he's doing a lot of really good, serious work, as Ed has said. And I guess Ed has hit something on the head here, because I've got somebody who works for NIDS on the phone whose name is John Alexander. John, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
You've been apparently listening. You're going to have to yell at us a little, John, even though it's the middle of the night. You're not too strong. Anyway, you sent me a quick, simple little fax. Yeah, that kind of really surprised me. You said mother and children, two, were there, and they left because of perceived danger to them. We're talking about this unidentified hot spot, right?
That's correct.
And you're saying they were there, and they left because of perceived danger to them. Is there any way you can expand on that without telling too much?
It would be very tricky because, as you know, we're very protective of the identities of the individual, and particularly the children, because the children have been harassed, as you know, some word got out about the location and who they might be and that. And the other kids at school have been pretty vicious.
Oh, my. So then...
But I can say this. We're talking about perceived physical danger from the phenomenon.
Wow. I say again, wow. In other words, here Ed was laying this out, and you're in effect confirming some aspect of it, but because of actual real danger to them, they couldn't stay.
Perceived. The unknown is always scary. And it should be a mother and an infant, and not an older child. And the word perceived is very important because the unknown is always, it scares us to death. And that's the problem. They need to do it again with a mother and an infant.
Is that something that sounds like something that might be tried, John?
It's very difficult. Because, as you know, there have been some fairly violent acts that have occurred.
I'm aware of that, yes.
And there are some that I believe Colm did not talk to that got very, very close to home. And so, you know, our responsibility would be, you know, how do you place somebody at that kind of risk?
The moral question.
Oh yeah, it's not easy to do. Now we have done, you know, what Ed has talked about, you know, doing things without traditional instrumentation, i.e., meditators and people who are sensitive. But to actually ask somebody to do that is a real dilemma, and certainly it is for Bob.
I understand that, and I understand why Bob would be hesitant if it went wrong, aside from whatever legal problems there might be, you'd never forgive yourself.
Right.
John, you and I have got to do a program soon.
Okay.
Would you be willing to do that?
Oh, certainly.
And again, please pass my... my best regards to Bob.
Okay.
Thanks.
Say hi to Ed.
Oh, you bet. Thank you very much, John.
Okay.
Take care. That's an actual NIDS employee, Colonel John Alexander. Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, Ed.
I've known Colonel Alexander for many years, and one of the finest officers I've ever met, and the right person, one of the right people to have up there. But they are not technical remote viewers. What we need is a mother who is willing, has the courage and the willingness to volunteer with her child, and I mean infant, to go and stake out, just like you would propitiate the dragon. And that's what it's going to take.
I know, but
because
I'll
tell you what, if we don't demonstrate that we're worth saving,
yes,
even at the last minute,
yes,
some survival may be at stake here, Art. I may be wrong, but I suspect that I'm not. And some courage has to be, it doesn't have to be macho military special ops black unit courage. I'm talking about a mother, a woman with a child, an infant child, that represents all the things that I said it represents, including courage. It's not just us guys that have courage.
Did you ever see a movie called The Seventh Sign?
No.
No. It was really interesting. And it depicted a woman through, and the end times were occurring. I mean, all manner of pestilence and everything else was coming upon the earth, and she was pregnant. And at the very end of the movie, there was this incredible scene where she was asked, as she was giving birth to this child, to give her own life for the child. And that's what stopped this cascade of the end times. One person,
very interesting,
willing to give her life for her child.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
And when you talked about what you talked about with a mother and an infant, it suddenly flashed on me. And I recalled that one woman giving her life for her child.
Well, anyway, if it's not done at that window of opportunity, it will. There'll be another hot zone somewhere else. And if in the end, this is what has to occur for a new level of contact and interaction with these people. And don't let Hollywood throw you a curve, because Hollywood has a way of, you know, the entertainment business of really embellishing.
Oh, I know.
That system out there, Art, is a loving system, and people know it. And even though it's scary, heck, you know, I've been apprehensive too when even being 1,000 yards away from some of these interesting phenomena. But it is a loving system. It's just very, very different.
Well, understand, because I do. John said it. Bob, in undertaking something like you're talking about right now,
yes,
would have to, you know, if I were in Bob's place, I don't know that I can make that decision.
You know, I didn't think about that, and I know they, you know, that's a bunch of very responsible people, but
yes,
I don't know what to say, Art. Those things did not occur to me from my angle of attack, which is, you know, via consciousness, looking at the systems, MOs, our MOs, and what would be required to initiate a new level of interaction. I didn't think about those administrative
real-world problems.
Yes,
yeah.
It didn't occur to me, but John's got a good point.
You just, in other words, can you tell us how you perceived this in the session that brought this to you?
It was it wasn't just one session. It was 15 years of experience on the ground and with remote viewing on the inside track and the outside as an observer, plus remote viewing. So it was a lot of years of experience that led up to this, and it was this knowledge that NIDS had a hot zone and the right people present, particularly Jacques Vallée,
mm-hmm.
that sparked preparation for this program in this manner.
I can understand, though, that the responsible people at NIDS, when this began to occur, when they perceived a danger to these children and the mother, got them the hell out of there. And I can understand they would have done that.
I have to point out that it's perceived danger. Yes, cattle are mutilated there. Yes, wires are ripped from a camera. All those, I agree. I agree that it would be perceived as certainly dangerous by most people. But unfortunately, it's going to take a lot more remote viewers to be able to get behind the scenes and see the Wizard of Oz pulling these strings, and the whistles and the bells don't mean that the Wizard of Oz is what he's projecting or it's projecting. And in this case, that's the case.
We
are in Oz.
We need human bait. We need. Perhaps that's an unfortunate word.
I use it facetiously.
Yeah.
I use that term facetiously.
Sure.
It needs to be a loving mother and infant, and with a little. Of course, she has to have some courage. But hell, walking down, it wouldn't be as much courage as walking down the streets of Los Angeles at night would take.
Well, I could understand a mother would do it, whether she would put her infant at possibly perceived danger or not. That's another question. And that connection you speak of is so strong between mother and infant that you might not find one willing to do that.
But we may be reaching the time where many mothers have dreams about what's coming. And that may put things in a different context and be looked at from a different perspective.
Whew. All right. I want to talk to you about something else. I want to take you slightly off track. Boy, what an hour or so, hour and a half here. My God, Ed.
It was good to hear John's voice, by the way.
That just absolutely shocked me that John would call up and offer that up. It just shocked me. Anyway, look, you and I have had a number of discussions about the sun and what's going on or will be going on the sun. Now, at the beginning of the year, Ed, in fact, before the beginning of the year, you were saying on my program, forget Y2K. You're saying forget Y2K. I remember you're saying this. You said there will be an event that will make that look like nothing. And you talked about a kill shot or a shot from the sun. And, you know, a strange thing happened, Ed, at the beginning of the year. It's like somebody turned a switch and everybody was talking about Y2K. It was on CNN. It was on every one of the networks. Everybody covered it. And then, boom, it's like somebody threw a switch off and the coverage of Y2K stopped. And when it did, I began to see articles and stuff on CNN and the other networks saying that the sun's activity in and around the year 2000, January, may make any Y2K concerns look small indeed. And that just blew me away, because you said that. Now, what's going on? Can you tell me what's going on in our mass media that turns switches on and off like that? What are they? There must be something they know. To an effect, in the press, fulfill what you had to say a long time ago, that Y2K would be supplanted or preceded by an event that would make it not even worth worrying about. You said that.
I can't tell you what's going on in the media. I could only speculate. I mean, there are individuals in NASA who probably who would not, because they would risk their occupation, their jobs, come forward individually and say, hey, I suspect there's a pattern emerging of increased solar activity that is a little bit disturbing. In fact, it's quite disturbing. It looks like the X-ray levels, for instance, are higher than we had anticipated. And they would brief that information would leak out to the media. That's speculation. But as remote viewers, we could never pick up the idea of any Y2K-associated activities. We could only pick up the idea of a very big solar flare. We're going to have to start dodging Thor's hammer really quickly, because that's what's going to happen. There's going to be at least one, you know, last month, I think about a month and a half ago, there was what NASA scientists call a planet buster.
That's correct.
It went directly in the opposite direction.
And for a few minutes, they weren't sure if it was going in the precise opposite direction or headed directly for Earth. There were a few really freaky moments for the scientists. Yes, that was a BBC story that I read on the air here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm talking about, Art. That kind of thing. If that would have hit us, it would have shut down power grids all over the place.
Yeah, you were
depending on where it hit.
And you were talking about this at a time when nobody else was. The audience ought to note that and remember it, because I sure do.
Well, you know, I've stuck my neck out a lot on this kind of thing, and it's a difficult thing. In terms of responsibility? Okay. Being armed, and please, all of you people who want to invest the time and the money to learn technical remote viewing, please take note. There is a responsibility to be had with knowledge.
Obviously.
And this is one of them. If you know what's coming, do you sit on the information? Do you stick your neck out and say, it looks as if, or what do you do? So that, in my position, I can do that because I'm Dr. Doom. But you may not be able to do that in your position as, let's say, an administrator at a township somewhere.
Yeah, so
you may just be perceived as the smartest guy in town. Don't tell anybody you're a technical remote viewer.
That, Ed, is why I say remote viewing is not for everybody, because everybody does not necessarily want to know, or they would not be helped in any way and probably hurt psychologically by knowing that something as severe as this is looming.
Ignorance is sometimes really bliss.
Well, sometimes it is.
It is. But there's more to this flare than you might think. One or two flares of that magnitude, it isn't just the idea of power grids eclipsing or making the Y2K problem moot
right.
at approximately the same time.
Right.
It is the weather. We're dealing with severe weather as a follow-up to this very increased solar activity, very severe weather, parched earth, a lot of extreme weather effects that will kill a lot of people directly and specifically indirectly, particularly famine. And I have more to say about that, too.
All right. Look, we're already here at the bottom of the hour, so...
when we get back, I'd like to talk about this pathogen that I mentioned, this crazy pathogen.
A lot of people want to hear about that, and I've read a couple of stories that would seem to confirm what you've said about that as well. So hold it right there. My guest is Ed Dames. And if you've got the guts, we'll be right back.
All the
Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Got to be one of the best shows we've ever done with Ed Dames by a country mile. We are going to shortly take calls for Ed Dames. However, he had something he wanted to get into, and so much of this has been so productive. We'll get to the phone shortly, Ed.
It deals with the pathogen. But I did neglect to mention something when we were talking about technical remote viewing training. And I teach and offer technical support on our company's website. And there is an active chat room, mostly for new people who have questions about it, run by our vice president, Joni Durf. And can I give our website address out?
Of course you can.
www.scitech.net, and that's P-S-I-T-E-C-H.net. And there's a link that Keith Rowland has placed on your website to ours also.
You bet there is. And one more time, let me give out the numbers for the TRV training tapes, technical remote viewing training tapes. And remember, folks, you can get just the first one to decide if you want to go further for, what, $49.95. And then the whole set now for a discounted six tapes for, what was it, $249.95.
It's six tapes and this $70 off special that we're offering.
All right. Well, let me see if you can give the numbers without mistake, Ed.
Okay. Two numbers, live operators and automated, your choice. Toll-free, 1-888-878-0333.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is 1-877-878-1777.
Excellent.
Thank you.
All right. You did do it this time. All right. Now,
one thing I wanted to, vis-a-vis the solar flare and
yes,
the weather art, was that there's yet one other danger that escapes people rather than just high winds and parched earth and those kinds of things, and that is there's a lot of radioactive waste storage sites around the world. And there are tornadoes appearing, for instance, in North America, in places where tornadoes have not appeared before. They're wandering over into areas where we haven't seen tornadoes before.
Right.
And if one of those tornadoes, for instance, rolled across Rocky Flats in Colorado, Rocky Flats is contaminated. I mean, there's about a centimeter or more of soil around that area that has a whole lot of contaminants.
God, I never thought about that.
If that is lifted up and carried into the cities, it is almost like a small nuclear weapon has been detonated in terms of fallout. So I want you to, you know, consider those kind of things in terms of weather and if you live in the vicinity of one of those storage sites.
Oh, great, Ed. Gee, there's one I never thought of.
Oh, so anyway, I've got some good news, but we may not get around to it tonight. Let me talk to you about the pathogen.
Well, now, I read a story, Ed, and I can't remember the source just now. It might have been the BBC, but they said that a mutated pathogen is now appearing in Africa, which in years past, long time ago, I guess, had killed up to two-thirds, I believe they said, of all the crops in Africa, two-thirds, and now it's back in some mutated form, and little alarm bells went off when I read that story.
Well, for all you phytopathologists in the listening audience, let me tell you what we've got here. Now, first of all, here goes my credibility level way down, but that, again, I don't know what to do about this. It was the toughest decision I ever made as a president of this corporation. I made this decision 2 years ago to put this on the air, on your show. And that it was that there was actually attached, physically attached to the rock that was called the Hale-Bopp Comet.
Yes.
A cylindrical man-made object. I won't use man-made. Let's call it artificial. This object that detached from the Hale-Bopp Comet, and as Hale-Bopp swung by and out of the solar system, this canister began to head towards Earth and entered the Earth's atmosphere about a year ago and disseminated its contents over the continent of Africa. That was a hard decision to make because, you know.
Yeah, you're sticking with this, huh?
Oh, yes. And we knew that the contents of the cylinder, actually the contents were embedded in the cylinder as it disintegrated in the atmosphere over Africa, or northwest Africa. These contents, the effects were a plant pathogen, some type of plant pathogen.
Mm-hmm.
We had to study this. We took another 6 months and studied it, and we knew that then, based upon more information, that we were dealing with something like a fungus. In fact, with further remote viewing, something that wasn't a fungus per se, wasn't an actual species, is what we called a fungal accelerator, for lack of a better term.
I remember that.
Well, now we've got it down.
Oh.
This specific, what these particles were living particles, and something that we could not produce here on Earth. But for lack of a better term, they were something like transposons. Transposons are used in genetic engineering to alter the codons, to alter the genetic, the genotypes, to alter the gene structure of genes. And in this case, what we've got are transposons that would mutate and cause a hybrid to occur in a specific species of ergot, specifically ergot. Do you know what ergot is?
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. It is what LSD is derived from. It's a fungus that grows on a number of different plant species, especially grasses. It grows on the heads of grain, and that's how LSD is derived.
Huh.
Ergot. And if you eat grass heads or grain heads that are contaminated, like maize or corn, that are diseased with this,
yes.
You can actually experience ergotism, which is hallucinogenic behavior, but it can get much worse. When cattle eat heavily contaminated species of grasses that are heavily contaminated with ergot.
Then it's part of the food chain.
Well, no. They have not just hallucinogenic effects, but there is a gangrenous effect that actually, this is unbelievable, but it actually happens. You can check with veterinarians. The limbs fall off at the joints.
What?
And it can happen to humans, too. So what I'm saying, here's the picture. This particular cylinder dissipated these transposons over Africa. And it hybridized and caused to mutate a particular species of ergot. There's about 32 species known. And the one that it caused to mutate and become more hardy is Claviceps purpurea. That's the one that you were just referring to. Interestingly, the rough translation of that literally is the holy fungus. Isn't that interesting?
The holy fungus.
The holy fungus. And that is the one that has now made it to North America. Quietly, it's not talked about a lot in the industry, in agriculture, but it's here.
Will it be talked about?
Oh, yes, particularly when the limbs start to fall off of cattle. And if people have nothing to eat, and out of desperation, they eat grain heads, wheat, maize, corn, contaminated with this, the same thing will happen to them.
There it goes, right at the knee, huh?
The arm, the knee, I mean, it's right out of the comedy books, only it's not comedy anymore.
Yeah.
And so something out there is giving us a double whammy. Something out there is saying that's it. It's taking away the food from our livestock, and it's taking away our food too by generating this super fungus.
All right, listen, I've got people waiting to talk to you, so we've got to take some calls.
An Andromeda strain, if you will.
Yeah, great. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Ed. Ed, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I have been listening for 3 years while you've been on the Art Bell Show, and you drop a lot of names. If Malachi Martin's on, then we'll go in this direction, and Jacques Vallée. My point is, remote viewing, according to SciTech, is supposedly 100% correct, but then you don't know where we're going to have this contact, but then we cannot remote view this and see what's coming. You remote viewed Art Bell and you were wrong there. What have you ever remote viewed that ever came to fruition. I really honestly don't understand.
Well, let's see. First
okay.
of all,
that's
let me qualify.
Question.
Our commercial contracts that we used to do, that people keep harking back to this, it is the 100% was what we offered our commercial contractees. That's what we offered.
All right, there's a long chain of things that you did get right, Ed.
The mother of all tornadoes, those kinds of things.
Yep.
But those were not 100%. Those were what we did as both human interest and public service projects. We no longer do commercial contracts because we're involved in training. That's so.
Well, yeah, but there's a lot that you got right, Ed. Nobody is 100%, and not all of your projects were 100% efforts. And that's what people have to understand.
Well, we were spread pretty thin, but the commercial contracts we did offer 100% on. It was actually in our statement of work.
And in the military, you did find gas canisters, didn't you, in Iraq?
Well, if we didn't, we would have.
Yeah.
The team would have been disbanded much earlier.
I'm sure. You forecast the frog problem a good 18 months ahead of time, that we frogs would begin to mutate and that sort of thing. There was a whole string of things that you predicted.
I think it may have been wrong.
I guess
to go forward with predictive intelligence,
yeah.
Except we were concerned about these kinds of things. And people have moved as a result of that, and it's good. Lives will have been saved. But remote viewing is best served as an investigative tool rather than a predictive tool. The reason I got involved personally in the predictive aspect was because these kinds of geophysical events are life-threatening to the point where many thousands of people's lives are threatened. And out of your listening audience, some people will get up and say, we've got to move, or we need to store fresh water or food, and we may be able to save some lives that way.
And other people will ignore it and say it's a bunch of crap, and that's fine, too.
Of course, of course.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell, and hi, Mr. Dames.
Hi there.
My name is Tara. I've got two quick questions for you.
All right,
you.
Where are you?
I'm calling from Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay.
And, Mr. Dames, I've got two quick questions. They're basically yes or no questions. Let me ask the first one, okay? Basically, if you think that aliens actually did, we were actually there's some kind of spawn or experiment or something, and the reason why the time frame has lessened in regards to our impressing them. Do you think also because of what's happening with the sun and everything else with the environment, and just this being the end times, per se, that they might be trying to say, well, are you worth saving? Okay, that's the first question. Okay, do you think that's all correlated? Maybe they know that there's something big is going to happen.
All right, So the question is, are we worth saving? That really is the question. They are deciding.
Well, yeah, basically.
All right, Ed?
With all we've done with the Earth.
All right, hold on. Take your answer.
Okay.
Ed?
I mentioned that in the last hour. I think I'm speculating, but I think that we need to demonstrate that we're worth saving. That's my in terms of survival. That's why I think that this ET UFO question may be of survival value to us. And that we may need to demonstrate that we're worth saving. So
right,
my answer is yes.
Okay.
It's a yes.
Okay, so with the answer being yes, then, looking at the larger global situation of humans, how we've basically desecrated the Earth. I mean, you were just talking about, the tornadoes and how it's we've poisoned the Earth and it's, whipped up radiation and everything. And our species is like softened, we're no longer noble creatures. Most mothers are more interested in their careers or monetary or things like that. And that's why we have all these push-off kids, and that's why we have the Columbine and everything else. Seriously, do you really think that we're worth saving after everything that we've done to the Earth and how we treat our own children now?
All right. That's a good question. In other words, the decision is being made. You admitted that. Her next question was a hell of a lot harder. and I'm not sure you're going to like the answer, Ed.
I think that we're in for a culling, and it's of biblical proportions. We're going to be culled.
I didn't think she liked the answer. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello. I was wondering, Ed, do you feel that Terrence McKenna was right about there being two types of alien slash visitors, dimension shifters, and hallucinations? And what kind do you think NIDS is investigating? Thanks.
All right. I'll answer the last one, both. As a matter of fact, we were told that by Dr. Keller the other night. But what about it? Two types?
I agree.
You do?
Yes, I, in fact, I think that many of the non-U.S. government constructed UFOs, which are happen to be weapons of defense, you know, they are Sunday's punch. The ones that aren't, that are truly UFOs, are humans from the future moving back into the past.
Time travel.
Yes.
First time caller line. You're on the air with Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello,
Hello, where are you, sir?
Well, I better not give the state or it will disclose the ranch.
Okay, don't do that then.
I have been on the ranch a number of times, and it is a very intriguing place.
Uh-huh, I know.
And, in fact, I have experienced some of the phenomena, Ed, on that ranch in the past with the rancher himself. But in fairness to you and John, you know, I'm not going to say what state it's in.
Thank you.
Apparently you don't want to get that out.
No, I don't want it out.
Mm-hmm. But
they don't want it out. I respect that.
Yeah, I respect that, too. I understand.
You've got to understand that people crawling all over at the press and all the rest of it would be detrimental.
However, I'd like to speak with John Alexander sometime because I'm not sure if they know there are, I know of two definite landing sites out, not on the ranch, but in the vicinity, and then two other definite. Or two other possible ones that have been used before. I think that might be to their interest to look at that, to look at those locations.
What do you think of Ed's remote viewing conclusion that a mother and an infant would trigger what we want?
I haven't really given that much thought. However, you'd have to sit down with John and the advisory board and see if they think that is what they want to do.
Well, thank you very much. Ed, hold on. I thought it was pretty much right on the mark because it prompted John Alexander, who works for NIDS at a high level, to call. And so I thought, that's it. And I think that is it. And I think a lot of you out there right now know that that's it, or may well be it. And I've never heard that before, never, ever, before tonight. Always something new and something to think really hard about. And by the way, if you've never seen it, pick up a copy of The Seventh Sign and then let me know what you think. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AF.
You're listening to Coast AM with Art Bell. Listeners west of the Rockies may call Art toll-free by dialing 1-800-618-8255. If you're east of the Rockies, the toll-free number is 800-825-8033. If you've never called Art before, you may use the first-time caller line at 775-727-1222. And the wild card line is 775-727-1295. When you get through, let it ring, and Art will answer your call in order on the air. This is Premier Radio Network.
Blue, for me and you, and think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Call Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
From Hawaii, a fascinating, thought-provoking show. I wonder if the mother-child relationship could also be construed to mean that we understand that the aliens are to us as a mother is to the child. Maybe a reach. Aloha from Rick. Maybe that is the key, huh? Good morning, everybody. Ed Dames is here. I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back. This is interesting. It's a relay from Stan Dale's wife, Holly Dale. And it reads, after finishing writing Dare to Prepare, I truly feel our world has changed permanently with regard to weather and disasters. Just released in the last couple of days by scientists at the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory in the United Kingdom, the interplanetary magnetic field has increased 40% since 1964, and has doubled since 1901. Scientists are attributing this to a more energetic sun, proving it is putting out way more energy in recent days. The sun's energy output directly affects our weather on Earth, particularly things like El Nino, increased hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, floods, freak storms, and so forth. As the sun puts out more energy, it changes our normal weather patterns. These are things we can't do anything about. It's not a matter of just controlling greenhouse emissions, though they too play a part. The sun's output is beyond our control, and it's simply up to us to deal with the consequences. Ed?
That about sums it up.
Sums it up, did you say?
Sums it up.
All right. Well, this hour I would like to lay into the phones heavily if we could. A lot of people want to ask you questions.
Okay.
So here it comes, the good, the bad, and the ugly. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
This is Ben calling you from Columbia, Missouri. Listening to you on KFRU 1400.
Yes,
and my question is for Ed. It's about a piece of secondhand information that I heard, actually, about some an experience you had remote viewing. And the reason I ask is I'm a Satanist, and I actually really enjoyed the program that you had with Andre Schlesinger. If you ever have him back on, that would be wonderful. Anyway, my question is, since I'm a Satanist, I'd heard a secondhand piece of information about you having had remote viewed an entity which you took to be Satan. And I'd heard the secondhand, got really excited, and heard that you were on the program tonight, thought I should call and ask. And being a Satanist, I don't believe in the Christian God or the Christian devil, but I'm fascinated to hear about this, if this is in fact something that is true, and would love to hear what your experience was.
Well, I did an entire program on that. Actually, a result of about 7 weeks of remote viewing, a project that I instituted about 2 months prior to the Columbine shooting, where I felt that the syndrome of children killing children in the United States may have something behind it that is supernatural, for lack of a better word. So I sought out to see what was behind that. I started out by remote viewing the idea of Satan as a generic search.
Right.
Okay. And what fell out of that project was the idea that Satan was not geographically associated with this earth anymore, but that there is an entity, two other entities, discrete individual entities, that one could call lieutenants of Satan, that are here and operating, yes. Although their resources are limited, they're elegantly focused in certain areas, focused to cause a war, because war is a primary source of hatred, and hatred spawns more hatred, so that's where their efforts are generally focused.
Do they manifest themselves as actual people?
No, they do not. Nope. No, they're what for all intents and purposes would be called supernatural beings.
Just kind of an unseen force.
Not even a force. They are entities. But they affect the minds of selected human beings, and I outline the projects that they had. For instance, one was to influence a hit team that would take out a high-level Israeli official. And 2 weeks later, that was when in Lebanon a brigadier general was killed by a hit team. Hezbollah hit team, that kind of thing, to foment rebellion that would turn into war, but elegantly, with elegant stratagems.
Well, just to be kind of ham-handed about it, and kind of sounding kind of ignorant, I guess. But what did it look like? What was it like? I'm just very curious. When you actually remote viewed this, what was it like? Each of them,
sort of an amorphous light. That's all. With no discernible form, but the ideas associated with them and some emotions are pretty discernible. And they know when you're looking at them. They know when a human's unconscious attention is focused on them, and they could care less, because it doesn't appear that anything that we do affects their plans.
Hmm.
That was very interesting to me.
Just
it was like, take a look. It's as if in years ago, when I was tasked with penetrating using remote viewing methods Saddam Hussein's war room, it was as if when I penetrated a war room of these two entities, they could care less that I could see all their battle plans, because nothing I would do would affect them.
Wow.
That was interesting to me.
Just out of curiosity, what is your religious preference? Just curious.
I'm a Christian.
Oh, okay.
Not an Orthodox Christian by any means. I happen to believe that Jesus Christ was a great role model, and that's about where it stands.
That's very cool. Well, thank you, Art, and thank you, Ed, and you have a good morning.
Take care, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Wild Card Line, your turn with Major Ed Dames. You're on the air. Hi.
Yes, I'm very glad to talk to you. When Ed suggested that the bond of love between mother and child might be what they want to see, I'm wondering if perhaps maybe the purity of our soul would be equal or perhaps superior to the just love. Now, to express the purity of our soul and put it in the tent would be difficult. And so this will only be a good thought to some parts of your listening audience, but I'm thinking that perhaps the unbloody sacrifice of bread and wine, which is the real presence of the body and blood of Jesus Christ, put in that tent with a human being willing to kneel before it, worshiping Jesus Christ in the form of bread and wine consecrated by a priest, might not then be as close as one could get to the purity of soul. Soul is not concrete and can't be put in there, but our worshiping of Jesus in the presence of the body and blood of Christ in communion might very well then be something they would understand as our attempt to be pure.
No, I think that's what Ed said in a more...
No, I disagree.
Oh, really?
I absolutely disagree. All those are ideas associated with human religion, and that has not... We're so far away from our souls. And in fact, mankind, instead of rising above our animal natures, we've allowed ourselves to be dragged down by them.
I don't think all of it.
The emotional meaning and value of that bond between a mother and an infant is has no attachments in terms of mind to it. It just is, and it's square one. Square one. For all the meaning, for instance, you're talking about the Christian religion. What about the Islamic world and the Muslim world? What about them? Are they left out of this?
No. No. You know, I can answer that just straight out. No, they're not. And I have always been lost when I've been told by people that they would be. Impossible. There are good people there and bad people there, as there are good and bad people here. I know a lot of really good Christians, and I know a lot of really bad Christians. And so, no, they're not left out, Ed.
But what we're doing when we take the symbols from a specific religion,
yeah,
the Christian world, is that's compartmentation. And I think it's the wrong way to do it. It's certainly wrong with vis-a-vis the conclusions that TRV, the Technical Remote Viewing, has come up with.
Gotcha. And somebody called earlier and made mention of, well, when Father Malachi Martin was around, you went that direction. Well, Father Malachi Martin, if you listen to him carefully, was saying almost exactly the same sort of thing that you've been saying, using slightly different language, talking about the third secret of Fatima, talking about something worse than we could possibly imagine. Imagine the worst, and it's worse than that, he said. And talked about signs from the skies. And you really have talked of very similar things. He talked right to it, if you really listen carefully to it.
Well, two things about that. One is that it's even I, with my nom de guerre of Dr. Doom, the one that I took to the White House with me, I don't like to talk about the kind of carnage that we're going to see, geophysically induced. We're going to see a lot of people die, especially from starvation and thirst, drought there. Number two is, you remember when you invited me, I told you I would like to go toe-to-toe with Malachi Martin on this issue of remote viewing 2.5 years ago.
And we did.
You invited me on a program for a half an hour. Malachi Martin and I talked, and I said, you know, Father, we don't take our spirituality, we don't lose our spirituality when we go in to the unconscious. It goes with us. And that's the truth. Technical remote viewing doesn't make you a more spiritual person. It causes you to stop and perhaps rearrange your priorities in life,
mm-hmm.
but it has no effect on spirituality.
Well, Father Martin is not one to mince his words or be afraid to confront anybody on any subject, and yet my recollection of that encounter was one basically of agreement.
Yes, it was agreement.
Yeah.
We were on the same sheet of music.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Got a question for both you, Art, and for Ed.
All right, sir, where are you?
Okay, I'm calling from Muscle Shoals, Alabama. My name is Louie.
Okay.
First for Ed, you talked several times about plagues and famine. I read recently in Discover Magazine where they were talking about the super flares on the sun that they've been watching.
Yes.
Do you think that this will have a direct correlation with these famines?
It is the single. 3 years ago, we were perceiving something in the out years that my company called a discontinuity, meaning a break in human evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a long time to determine what that was, because it was global in nature and it killed a lot of people directly and indirectly, mostly indirectly through parched earth. This turned out to be our own sun, and over the last couple of years, we were finally able to say it is, you know, it'll be a solar flare. And we told Art that about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Right.
So we did that because we wanted people to think about doing two things. Number one, moving, getting away, moving to places where there are snow-packed mountains with deep valleys. That would offer protection, or areas where there would be a lot of fresh water and rain. If they could not do that, then think about storing a lot of fresh water and food.
Right.
That's why we went forward with mm-hmm. that kind of doom and gloom scenario. That's why.
Well, that's really good to let people know that, because they can be prepared.
Well, it's up to them to make the choices. And and more than anything, what we want people to do is to learn how to remote view, not just because it's the business that I'm in, but because it's who in the heck wants to listen to someone like me saying, a lot of us are going to die, and it's going to be a Mad Max scenario, which I believe that it is, especially in the cities. And
they make their own decision based on their own information.
That's right.
Right. The other thing I wanted to mention, I want to see, Art, if you knew anything about this or if you remember hearing about it. We used to live in Detroit and listen to WJR at the time.
Mm-hmm.
This was about 1976 or 1977. They were having a lot of UFO sightings at the time.
Oh, yes.
My father and I were talking about this the other day, and I told him if I got through, I would ask you about this. In either the fall of 76 or spring of 77, the radio host on WJR had come on and made the comment. He said specifically he did not want to say what it was he saw. He wanted the people to call in. He said he was on his way to work. He was coming down 265, and he seen this thing come over the freeway. He said it was large, but he didn't really want to describe it because he said it was not an airplane.
Sir, I've got audio tapes of the sightings in Michigan and out over the lakes that occurred. I've got radar operators who are sitting there saying things like, oh, my God, look at that. It's split. It's two. Now it's three.
Right.
And so forth and so on. I've got those tapes, sir.
Yeah. The thing was, when he said this, they cut him off. And it was nobody said anything else about it.
Maybe that's a clue for you as to why we're on CKLW right now.
Right, I understand that.
Listen, I got to go. Thank you very much. Those are well-known sightings. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hi. My name is Jenny, and
where are you?
Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson, all right.
And I happen to come from five generations of ranching family in New Mexico.
Oh.
And it was kind of grew up there. My brother and I, with a couple of us, one was a twin, with remote viewing, and also the ability to have telepathy. And some people believe it, and some people don't.
Right.
You know,
right.
For us, it seems to work. I've listened to Ed tonight, and of course, I'm an avid fan of Art, and I would say the information that you were giving is something I would call knowing, that when you hear it, you know that it's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be interested.
Although, ma'am, you know something?
Yeah.
I think you would be surprised. Because they were full of invective and not something I could read here on the air,
mm-hmm.
I didn't read them. But for some people, it invokes incredible anger. I mean, incredible anger. I got some faxes here that just came again and again and again, just with raging, out-of-control anger at hearing this.
Oh my God. You cannot believe the kind of anger that you hear walking down the street. I mean, if you can hear people's thoughts, you can't believe what they think and what they say.
Yeah, I bet.
They think one thing, and they say something else.
Yeah.
I've been shocked in my over the years. Seeing what people, you know, and that's been amazing to me. And it brings on a great deal of anger because people have to come to terms with the fact that perhaps there is a God. And I did some studies not too long ago. I can't call the year. I don't have the paper in front of me. You may know this, Ed or Art. But they sent a curve of light that went around Jupiter. Are you familiar with that?
They sent a what?
A light beam that curved around Jupiter.
Who's they?
I don't have the information, but I can fax it to you.
Do you mean a ring around Jupiter?
Yes. But a light ring that was sent from... something we sent from space, and it curved around the planet.
Well, we have certainly sent spacecraft that have gone around Jupiter for various reasons, but I'm not quite clear on what she's talking about.
It may be she may be referring to my teacher, my mentor, and the person who developed the genesis of remote viewing today, and the military remote viewing, was Ingo Swann. Ingo Swann,
right,
and Harold Sherman, another famous American psychic, both remote viewed Jupiter way prior to the first space probe passing that way, Voyager. Mm-hmm. And they perceived Jupiter to have a ring around it. And, of course, NASA poo-pooed that idea until the Voyager spacecraft detected the ring around Jupiter. And that was a good example of remote viewing.
All right, good. We are at the bottom of the hour, folks. And again, I want to remind you to order SciTech's TRV training tapes. You can call 24 hours a day, one of two numbers, either 1-888-878-0333 or 1-877-878-1777. And then one more thing. If you would like a copy of this program, and I can imagine you would because you'd want others to hear it, it's 1-800-917-4278. Again, to get a copy of this program right now, 1-800-917-4278. We'll be right back.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach out at 1-775-727-1222 or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach out on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Good morning from the high desert. Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Major Ed Dames, is here. And this really has been some kind of program tonight. It'll be a long, long time before I forget this one. He'll be right back, and we're going to stick close to the phone, so stay right where you are. Good morning, everybody. Ed Dames is here, Major Ed Dames. What a program this one has been. Ed back on the air again, and they're lined up like soldiers to talk to you. So unless you have anything that you absolutely want to get in this final segment that we have not yet touched on.
Just one more thing I left out, and
okay,
that is Operation Guiding Light is SciTech's program that we initiated a couple months ago for high schools in the United States. It's we donate our entire TRV training tape sets,
really,
to high schools, and any high school librarian on high school letterhead can write SciTech requesting our tapes, and we will send them out.
Really?
Yes.
That's incredible. I hadn't heard about that one.
Now, we have a lot of municipalities that buy our tapes, but this is a donation. It was a result of the Columbine incident. In fact, that high school and neighboring high schools got a couple of copies each.
My. All right. That's incredible. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Yes, sir.
It's Bill in Bend, Oregon.
Hi, Bill.
And I have a couple questions for Ed, but one quick comment for you. is I wish there was some way you could run your program without commercials, because it's really frustrating to hear the world's going to end and we're all going to die, and now a message from our sponsors.
Well, you wouldn't be hearing it without the message.
Yeah, I just, if we could set up a donation system or something just to be able to get it without the interruptions.
Commercial radio, like commercial television, sir, is brought to you in our society by commercials. I mean, that's just the way it is. I understand your wish, but, you know. It's like...
Ed, I have a quick question for you.
Shoot.
And I hope you'll give me a straight answer. I mean, I'm a father. I have a three-month-old child, and it's really neat. I mean, watching my child breastfeed, and I love my wife very much. And I realize you're living in Hawaii, and when you look into the future in this cosmic web of conscious thought, where are the safe places to be? Central Oregon, is that a safe place to be? Are there places that are safer than others?
Yes, there are places that are safer than others. One place is in the eastern portion of British Columbia, and that's one spot near the Lake Valley region. The western side of Glacier National Park, center of mass, whitefish, Switzerland and Liechtenstein, and where I am. Other than that, I don't know. We haven't looked, nor will we have the time.
So the closest one, I guess, to you, sir, would be to your north.
B.C.
Yeah.
Now, when you say you haven't looked, I mean, what would cause you to look at these specific spots in the first place, or have you looked and these came out to be safe?
That's a pretty good question. How much actual searching have you done, Ed, for?
The way we did it was we looked at individuals who were in my training course years ago. Actual specific individuals, and these places turned out to be a function of their personality, the individual's personalities, where they would enjoy living as much as possible, and other intangibles that we couldn't quite understand, except the commonality was either deep canyons, very deep canyons, or caves, and in all cases, fresh water, either as snowpack in glaciers, lakes, or rain. That was a common factor.
Okay.
And one other factor was relative isolation, so that you don't have spillover from cities.
Mad Max time.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, yeah, my name's Claudia, and I'm calling from South Lake Tahoe.
Hello, Claudia. You're going to have to yell a little bit. You're not for that.
All righty. I have a couple questions for Ed Dames. I believe that we have an etheric spirit body, an actual body, that lives in the unconscious, and he's the one flying around looking for you when you name the target to show you the information that you seek, that you go look, I mean, that you seek. What's your opinion on that? Do you think that that's close?
I disagree in terms of remote viewing. In the old days, and in the military unit, you know, prior to the development of this tool, this focused high attention management technique that we use, we did use altered states. And in those days, where you lay down in a darkened room, you go into an altered state in a very controlled way, then it was something like what you're suggesting.
Well, Art Bell had a guest on the other night, and she was. This is about cloning, and she said that the only way that we become immortal is through understanding chemistry.
Oh, very, very, very good point.
My question is the unconscious a concept, not really matter? And if so, when cloning comes into play, how will we produce the unconscious to be in connection with the universal mind? I mean, would they just be like making machines with just a conscious, not a subconscious or unconscious?
All right, Ed, she was a doctor who is going to be or is in discussions to assist Dr. Seed in the first full human cloning. Really an interesting guest. I asked her an hour into the interview, do you believe in God? She didn't even miss a beat, said no. When you die, it's black velvet. I mean, that's it. Gone. Goodbye. Uh-huh. And she said the only way that human beings will eventually become immortal is by their own hand, by science, and that cloning will be the answer to that. Eventually, we'll be able to clone and virtually download the information in mind, and that, of course, would be a form of immortality. So
it would be. I agree. In terms of consciousness, in terms of the continuity of consciousness,
yes.
That's been the buzzword in the last 8 to 10 years,
yep.
I agree. I absolutely agree. But if you have two living organisms, in this case, in her example, living human beings, they would each possess different personalities as a function of different souls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The consciousness would be almost a pure clone up until the moment that there was a differentiation, until there was a split. At that point, the experiences would be different, and because each of the souls would be different, then you'd have different entities. Now, she would not agree with that, and I accept that. That's what pure science, you know, these days
is all about.
Sort of, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't mean to be trite.
Oh, no, that's right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm Rob. I'm from Altoona, Pennsylvania. It's like Nowheresville. Okay?
Well, no, Altoona's all right, Rob.
Stop saying it. If you're not here, then you don't know how horrible it is. But
No, I've been there. It's not that bad. When you go somewhere else, you'll find out.
I've been a lot of places.
I take it you're imprisoned there in Altoona.
Is in a prison, like in jail?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
No. Then what holds you?
I'm 17. I'm still in school.
Good answer.
I just like to stay up late.
All right. What's your question?
First time I ever listened to the radio tonight, or I guess you'd say it this morning, 10 a.m. What's on? Your show.
Yes.
And I hear Dr. Doom and coming. It's like, oh, okay, I'll listen to this.
Yes, well, we're also hearing you, so turn your radio off, please.
Okay, hold on for a second, please.
Very, very confusing and will not allow you to conduct a coherent conversation.
Is it decent there?
Yeah, there you go. All right, go ahead.
All right. Now, I hear this Dr. Doom stuff, and it's like, all right. Now, my question to you guys is, you guys talk about the 2000 thing and how these solar flares and all this
yes.
are going to happen, or like, you know, something's going to happen of great magnitude, right?
Yes.
Are you aware of 9999?
Yes.
September 9th, 1999?
Yes, I am.
You know what's going to happen?
No, but we're going to find out, aren't we?
Well, computers are supposedly going to fail safe.
I know.
Like, and this is supposed to be so horrible. I study electronics, and you know, I'm not real, I guess you'd say good, but I thought about this.
They are concerned, legitimately concerned about 9999, but not nearly so concerned as they are about January 1st.
Oh, yeah. Now, the big thing about this is, like, we have this Constitution. Now, if all this stuff that, like you guys are saying, is not going to happen, that's an uproar on national security. That's a felony offense. You know what I mean? I'm surprised, like, in all honesty, like, the FBI hasn't come or whatever.
Come where?
Like, to you guys' door saying, hey, you guys can't say this because people are getting spooked. Because people talking about the holy fungus and how, you know, limbs are going to fall off when you eat the cows or eat the grass. That's quite spooky stuff, but it's all relatable. You know what I mean?
Well, it's your choice to sit out there as nearly an adult and believe or disbelieve as you will.
Yeah, I can agree with a lot of stuff you're saying, because I've had some freaky stuff happen. You know, everyone has. You know, it's like it's easy to believe some things, and it's not easy to believe some. You understand what I'm saying here?
Yes.
But it's like,
the information is offered for your consideration, and it's one of those things where, as you listen to it, you either know what you're hearing is right, or you think it's a bunch of hooey.
Mm-hmm. Now, my question to you, like, the sincere question is, now, how do you guys, like, not really get your information, but how do you divulge it and go, okay, this is what I'm going to say, and I can believe this will happen because I
well,
have
all right, the answer to that is easy. It's what you're hearing from Ed Dames is remote viewing. That is what all you're hearing is based on, remote viewing. And if you listen to the beginning of the program, you would understand what remote viewing is. That you asked the question indicates to me that you probably didn't. So hopefully there in Altoona, they'll repeat the first hour, and you'll find out what remote viewing is. West to the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi.
Yes, that's you.
Okay. This is Vicki from Beaverton, Oregon.
Hi, Vicki.
And I'm wanting to know, should I be retiring in September or January, and is Libby, Montana okay? And will we be filing taxes April 15th,
2000? You know, I'd rather take your last question first.
Okay.
Ed?
I don't know. I would have to give you a personal opinion, and it would jeopardize my standing with the IRS. So I don't want to do it.
All right. Let's work backwards then. What else do you want to know?
I am, my feelings.
Oh, retiring.
From,
retiring.
Yes, September yes. or January.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know.
You know, those are the kinds of questions that really you have to answer. You listen to the information. Maybe you do some remote viewing yourself, and you make that decision yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you shouldn't retire at all.
Well, I'm just contemplating if I need to get to higher ground. I mean, this is...
Well, if you know in your own mind that you need to get higher to higher ground,
mm-hmm.
strongly enough that it moves you to higher ground, then you'll answer it yourself.
There's a way to know without a way to know that's reasonable without learning technical remote viewing, and that is, where just prior to going to sleep this morning or any other morning that you choose, you know, frame that question succinctly in your mind. You know, that particular question, Beaver Turn, Oregon, what did you say the town was?
Libby, Montana.
Yeah, Libby. That particular question, it's a dichotomy. And go to sleep with that, framing that on your mind no other idea. And when you wake up in the morning,
mm-hmm.
as soon as you wake up, you have about 30 seconds to grab the answer before it is gone. So you should have a tape recorder next to your bed or a pen and a pad next to your bed and write that answer down, because it's going to evaporate in about 30 seconds. But if you get it, it'll be the right one.
Now, as your conscious mind takes over from your unconscious mind, indeed, whatever you had fades very quickly. So he's right about that.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, dreams fade very quickly unless you sit there and write them down or consciously recollect them. So
right.
If you get that answer, write it down and be sure and let me know.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Morning.
Good morning.
Ed, you've got $300 of my money.
Oh, good.
I ordered
good,
the...
That'll help me hollow out my... my volcano here.
I sure hope so. I got the intro tape a long time ago, and then I ordered the real easy on your website. I ordered the full set, and I got that not too long ago. I haven't really had time to spend. I guess I will now.
Get into my classroom. And that's where you and I personally will interact, and I'll grade your papers, critique them, and bootstrap your progress. If you don't do that, it's a lick on you.
Art, this is Jeff. I'm from Hutchinson, Kansas. Listen to me on KFH.
Yes, sir. Wichita.
Wichita. Yes, sir. I have two questions real quick. I couldn't remember where the cylinder was initially from, and then I wanted to ask about something else that was supposed to be real bad, which nobody's talked about tonight, which was North Korea.
Oh, my. The cylinder, you're referring to the cylinder that Ed said detached from Hale-Bopp?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, that's your
answer. Detached from Hale-Bopp, and it was prepared as a special delivery from what I call the gardeners. Now, you know, there's something,
gardeners.
If you want, as a remote viewer, if you want to experience a lot of agony, you don't need to look at children who are starving. Turn your focus to the earth itself, and you'll experience agony like you will not believe. And so this is a pain relief pill. And one could look at it that way, for terra firma, Mother Earth.
Or you might think of it this way, sir. We're about to be furrowed under. And that was brought to you by the Seacrane Company and Mindspring.
We didn't mention anything about North Korea. There's been stuff
right.
about North Korea and South Korea lately.
All right. Very good point. Thank you. Ed's had a lot to say about the Koreas. I believe your statement was, Ed, the next atomic weapon used in anger will be in Korea.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago, and of course that was laughable, too, as laughable as the solar flares 2 years ago. So it's another example when we're armed with the information, the responsibility is, do you put it out or not? And ethically, you have to put it out. So we did.
Yes, and do I think North Korea would be capable of using a nuclear weapon? You bet I do. Do I think they have one? Probably they do. The best information seems to be that they might have several.
They had enough plutonium
yep.
10 years ago for 1.5 weapons.
All right. We may have time for one more here. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Hi.
Yes, good morning, Art. This is Dan in Virginia.
Yes, Dan.
Comet Lee, is this the third comet that is in the Hopi prophecy?
Bless your heart. Whether or not we relate it to the Hopi prophecy, I sure wanted to ask you, Ed, about Comet Lee.
What we do know is that it's nothing to worry about. It's in terms of it's not going to impact Earth. That, as remote viewers, we're telling you, it's going to miss Earth.
There are
going to cause a lot of consternation, but it's going to miss Earth. Is it the Nostradamus comet? We think so. We think that it is, so that you'll be able to see it on my birthday. I'll be alive for one half century on August 11th, and during that eclipse, you should be able to see it, and that does appear to be the one that Nostradamus says is the harbinger of some interesting.
You are turning 50 on August 11th?
I am. Maybe we can do a birthday program.
Oh, man. You're turning 50 on August 11th. I don't know if I like that at all.
I'll be a half a century old. Ed Damus will be a half a century old on August 11th.
Well, maybe I wasn't so far off the mark when I... What is it I called you at the beginning of the show?
You called me the King of Terror.
King of Terror.
I resemble that.
Listen, wonderful show, Ed. But like all things, we're out of time. And so until next time, and, yeah, we'll definitely plan a show on that day, all right?
Okay. The best to you and your family, Art. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, and good night, Ed.
Good night.
All right. That's it, folks. That was Ed Dames. Always the very best. Love him, hate him, and there's people in both camps out there, believe me. You can't ignore him. He's the noise you can't ignore. Again, to get tapes of this program, and I can sure understand you might want a tape of this one, call 1-800-917-4278. Even at this hour, operators sit there and await your ring. 1-800-917-4278. I'm Art Bell from the high desert. See you tomorrow.